Yeah, Frank here has got his own billiard room.
Yes, it's what do you call it, Kramer?
Billiard room.
No, not billiard. Not the billiards. It was...
Billiards room.
Come on already. Come on. We call it the...
The place to be.
The place to be. Yes, the place to be.
Then I shall be there.
Now, it's time. Live and in living color.
The Grandy Man can.
Time to play the game!
Well, you always left me satisfied and smiling, so...
That's what she said!
Why do I want this? I want to make bank, bro. I want to get ass. I want to drive a Range Rover.
Place to be Nation, Scott Criscola and Justin Rosero. This is the Place to Be Podcast.
Very nice, Mr. Criscola.
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis.
And then they trash him and say he's a fucking pill-popping, you know, pothead or whatever when he left.
Fuck you, Daddy.
I don't know the fuck the Department of Health is.
You could do worse than Josh Richards.
And welcome back to another great episode of the one and only Place to Be Podcast. I am your co-host, Justin Rosero, and of course it is Labor Day. We're coming at you live from deep inside the PTB Man Cave, and I must apologize because my USB on my super-duper microphone has broken. I need to order a new one, so the next few episodes I may sound like we did back in episode 10, Scott. Hopefully you sound a little bit better than you did that, I think.
JR, first off, it's always good to talk to you, sir, and happy Labor Day weekend to you and to everyone. Hope you enjoyed your... the last, well, technically, but not scientifically, the last weekend of summer. Obviously, summer ends technically in a few weeks on September 21st. It's when we begin autumn, but in the calendar, this is usually the last hurrah of summer before we head into the fall. Of course, college football started this weekend, and the NFL starts in a couple of days, and of course, the full week one later on in the week. Speaking of NFL, we'll have a little funny games for you in a little bit, and of course, the final quarterfinal of the PTB Nation tournament. But this is episode 157 of the Place to Be podcast, which means, of course, it is Monday, and that means we delve into the big steel box. Now, JR, school hasn't totally started for everybody, so I don't know if he's in here yet. Hopefully he's not. Let's see. He was here in here all summer. Maybe he taught summer school. I don't know.
Maybe he's off to Stansbury.
Maybe he is off to Stansbury. Let's see. Let's see.
Hey, what is going on here?
I thought you were off today. You don't work overtime. You're in a union. Go away. All right.
He's in the union.
All right. Tonight on the Place to Be podcast, we are, of course, inside the Vintage Vault. And it is a special Vintage Vault as we will be hitting exactly the halfway point of the 1997 pay-per-view year. It has been very controversial. Well, I don't say controversial. That comes later. It's been kind of unique.
Mm-hmm.
It's had a lot of high points. It's certainly had its share of low points. But for the second time in PTB Nation history, we have a live recap of this show from one of our own. Of course, we've always had people come on, the Kyle Forchettis, the Jay Wimets, that have been at pay-per-views. But mm-hmm. for the second time in our history, one of us has been there. That is, of course, you, my beloved PIC. We're inside your beloved Dunk. Well, it wasn't called the Dunk yet.
No, not yet.
For tonight, on the Place to Be podcast, inside the Vintage Vault, the 1997 King of the Ring.
King of the Ring, King of the Ring, King of the Ring. That's my opening theme, because we don't have an opening video, so.
No. It is the fifth annual pay-per-view King of the Ring. Just to recap, the previous winners, Bret the Hitman Hart, The Rocket.
Bret the Hitman Hart.
The Rocket, Owen Hart. Mabel. Candy Girl. And of course, last year, the legendary pay-per-view victory for Stone Cold Steve Austin. So who will win the King of the Ring tonight? JR, shall I do the open and then you get into your background, or should we, why don't we get into the story with which you and our good friend JP arrived at the Providence Civic Center on this Sunday night in June of 1997.
Yeah, of course, it's a little bit different than Rumble 94. We're a little bit older, and you know, we were able to purchase our own tickets, and the tickets were not that great. Of course, we were way up in the nosebleeds. So we weren't as excited as we were for King of the Ring 94, but, you know, Raw had been pretty good, and, you know, it was still a pay-per-view, so we were excited, although the card itself, obviously, was not looking that great. So Jim's dad, the late, great Waylon Price, drove us to the Civic Center, let us out on the side of the road, and we walked off inside. We, of course, made our way out to the concourse when Doc Hendricks was doing a little pre-pay-per-view free-for-all promo. And Scott, do you know that during that free-for-all, you can see me and Jim in the background?
Really? Really? Of course, you had your beloved Yankee hat on.
No,
and,
no,
Tito
I didn't.
Martinez.
I didn't.
Actually, you know?
I actually had an Orioles hat on.
Yeah. What?
An Orioles hat, yes. And my man Jason Greenhouse was weeping right now.
You little, do you have your little Rafael Palmeiro t-shirt or not? So were you and Jim standing in line with the cable guy? Or, oh, no, wait a minute. No, that was you and I. Never mind.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, there was no cable guy in 1997, no. And unlike you and I, you guys had nice weather, whereas you and I were standing in, like, 7-degree weather. But
yes, actually, we're at a the yearly cookout that my uncle and aunt always had for my cousin's birthday, and I had to leave that to go down to go to the show. So we made our way inside, of course. We were not too excited, but like I said, it was still a pay-per-view, so...
Right.
Do you want to talk now about how the car changed, or should we do that as we go along?
Well, why don't we get into our open and set everybody up, and then we'll dive into, before we get into the actual matches, we'll talk about the shift, because we talked, JR, when we did that Raw, what was it, the night after Good Friends, Better Enemies, we were prepping for In Your House, Cold Day in Hell, that we had a little commercial for the King of the Ring that had a couple of matches that would end up not happening. So... June 8th, 1 week after my birthday, 1997, live from, yes, the Providence Civic Center in Providence, Rhode Island. Now, of course, the new way we do things, we're going to shorten it a little bit. But, of course, when we did the 1994 Royal Rumble, JR, we didn't do our kind of adjusted format of going through the history of the arena. But let's go very quickly, because this is your home office. You have a right. You should be allowed to talk about the history of your beloved home arena. So... tell us about the history, quickly, of the Providence Civic Center.
Opened in 1972, construction cost was $13 million by Dimio Construction Company. Of course, it was renovated in the 2000s, 2008. It was most recently renovated, but it was early in the 2000s. It was renamed the Dunkin' Donuts Center. Of course, the famous coffee place that was founded in the Northeast here. Yep. Tenants, Providence Bruins, my beloved Providence Friars, been there since 1972. The URI Rams played there for a good, 20-something years on and off.
Wow.
When they weren't playing on campus. The Providence Reds, the Rhode Island Reds, or the AHL, and the New England Steamrollers, the AFL. So,
yes.
The of course, beloved Providence Civic Center, home to many Monster Jams and other big truck events, and the Providence Bruins, of course, play there. So, a lot going on.
Yes, and it's changed a lot in the last 20 years, because my brother always used to say you had to pack your Glock when you went to a show at the Civic Center in the late 80s, early 90s. But it's definitely gotten a lot better.
Yes.
And we'll return to the dunk, of course. This is the last one. But
well, not everyone's favorite college team can be built out on a farm somewhere up in northern Connecticut where no one visits or cares about besides middle-aged women and men who root for the women's team.
Yeah, pretty much. And you know, bars and backyards and a lot of, you know, encephalitis viruses and things like that. All right. Now, your attendance, 9,312. Not a sellout. You know that, JR. What's that? What's probably about half full, I would think, right?
Yeah.
About 50?
Yeah. Holds, only holds 12-4 for basketball, so.
It doesn't seem like that. And I've been there plenty of times with you for both pay-per-views and Friar games, and it looks bigger.
Mm-hmm.
But that's okay. Beautiful. By the way, as JR mentioned very quickly, it has been renovated, and the seats are beautiful. Of course, they're all black to indicate the beloved Friars and half the color of the Bruins, the P Bruins. But it has gotten a lot nicer. The convention center's there and all that kind of jazz. Not that we work for the tourism office or anything, but your buy rate, 0.5, usual. And your announcers, returning to his seat after taking a pay-per-view off, VKM, Vincent
yes.
Kennedy McMahon, and good old JR, Jim Ross, kind of a weird team. We'll talk about, as we go through the show, why Jerry the King Lawler is not in his seat. But this is an odd team. And when you guys got to the arena and took a seat, What were your thoughts seeing those two guys behind the seat, behind the table?
I remember being pretty upset because, you know, last time I had been there was Royal Rumble 94, and we got an awesome surprise when Ted DiBiase came out as a surprise commentator, making his return, had been gone for a few months. So we kind of expected maybe the same thing. We knew Jerry Lawler was wrestling, so we're like, all right, you know, maybe we'll get another, kick the show off another great surprise return to be the commentator and get things going. But then we realized, nope, no one's special. Just going to be Vince and JR. And also what pissed us off was there was no big coronation set for when they crowned the king at the end of the night. You know, that had
really?
Been a staple of this show.
Oh, yeah.
Since 1993. So I remember being pretty pissed off. And already it kind of felt like this was going to be like a lazy, half-assed pay-per-view. When you factor in the build that changed a million times and everything else going on in the company at that point, the fact that they couldn't even build a set in the corner kind of pissed us off as well.
Very strange why they wouldn't put the coronation. Maybe they're starting to get that feeling, as we've talked about, you know, the change in the mood that they thought the coronation and the crown was a little cheesy, and I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, looking back, it makes perfect sense why they didn't do it. At the time, though, you're not really in that mindset because
No. You
could see things changing, but you didn't really think at that point that, okay, wow, we're into this new, you know, crazy attitude style era or something, anything like that, you know. It's different when you're there in the moment live.
Yeah. Yeah, and yeah, you just wanted to kind of what you saw on TV, and the coronations were cool. And, of course, the year before in Milwaukee, Steve Austin, when he got to the throne, of course, cut the promo of a lifetime. So you probably were excited at that point and then realized, well, it might be something different. Never
right, happened. Exactly, yeah. I mean, you just expected something big. And, you know, every year they had it. And even the Mabel one, you know, was still kind of a big deal at the time out on the podium.
Right.
So, and Brett with Lawler and Owen, you know, it had always been like kind of the symbol that culminated of the night. So it was just
right.
Weird.
Mm. Your free-for-all, which for once, JR, you don't have to worry about. Your beloved, your awesome dad, Gazzo, didn't have to sit and watch this. So I'm sure he didn't buy it for himself.
No.
But for those that were interested in purchasing, I don't think I watched the show live. No, I didn't. I didn't see the show live. For those that were interested.
Everyone can check that on the tick sheet they keep of whether you've seen the show live or not. I know a lot of fans have that check mark, like a chalkboard hanging on their wall or something.
Yes, exactly. That and whether and that and how long it takes us to say, by the way, follow along with us, bigelow34.proboards.com.
Yes. I'm sure they were starting to put the check mark in the left column that you had seen this pay-per-view live and had to erase it quickly when you corrected yourself and let them know you did not
yes,
see it live.
No, I did not see
now,
it.
Now the stage has officially been set.
Now we can set it up. Right, we got to go through all of our moments, and
yes,
here we go.
Yes.
All right. For those that were thinking of buying the show, the free-for-all, which I'm assuming you watched.
I was in and out, because that was when Doc Hendricks was setting up, so we were kind of going out there and getting ready. So, yeah, we caught some of it.
Okay. It was the Headbangers, Mosh and Thrasher, taking on, look at this team, JR, a team that had been, of two guys that had been kind of feuding over the past month in random matches, pay-per-view and Raw. And that's, of course, Billy Gunn, Rockabilly, and Jesse James. Setting the free-for-all. I didn't watch it live, sorry. And my PSC was there, so I don't know what you're saying. But the Headbangers won. They defeated Billy Gunn and Jesse James in a little over 6 minutes. And I'm sure there were promos cut. Now, as JR mentioned, this card went through a myriad of changes. We knew that The Undertaker would defend the World Wrestling Federation Championship at some point against somebody.
Yes.
At this show. Lord only knows who. And then, of course, the continuing brawl and battle between Stone Cold Steve Austin and the Hart Foundation. Where would Shawn Michaels fit in all this? Where would Ahmed Johnson fit in all this? I mean, just such weird stuff going on. Now, when you first, JR, saw the first commercial, your first local ad, what was the card?
It had, like we mentioned last week, it was Undertaker versus Ahmed Johnson. Mm-hmm. And then we also had a Legion of Doom versus British Bulldog and Owen. But actually, before that was Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels versus British Bulldog and Owen
right.
Hart. Then it changed to Legion of Doom versus Shawn Michaels and versus. I'm getting confused now. Legion of Doom versus British Bulldog and Owen Hart was changed. That was the second incarnation mm-hmm. of that match. And then also interesting, they had a match set up for Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels in a 10-minute challenge. And if Bret could not beat Shawn, he'd never wrestle in the U.S. again. They also had a Steve Austin versus Brian Pillman match.
Oh.
And along this time as well, Ahmed was pulled out of the title match, and in went Farouk. So the second incarnation of this card was Undertaker, Farouk, Austin, Pillman, Bret, Shawn, and Bulldog and Owen against LOD. So this was something that was really, we were pretty jazzed up about that original card, and as things started to change, we started to lose some steam regarding our excitement for that show. But why don't we, save, you know, how things developed into what it became as we move along, I'd say.
Sure. Just a side note, how much were your tickets, do you remember? For the nosebleeds?
No, I have no idea. I mean, they weren't bad. I know that. So I could afford it on my... Actually, I don't know if I was even working at this point. I don't think so.
Yeah, you would figure, let's see, upper nosebleeds, midnight, probably 25 maybe.
Yeah, I don't think it was even that, honestly.
Interesting. Okay. All right.
We were way up then. We were pretty far up. We really couldn't see much.
Did you try to move? Were the ushers ball busters like they were Chase Stadium back in the day?
No, they weren't bad. We moved down during the opener, but we'll get to that as we go because the story involves the guys in the opener.
I see. Okay. All right. Let's our first match. By the way, this is. Boy, what a night it's going to be. Yeah. By the way, as I was saying, this is the, second straight year that we would not have the full tournament on pay-per-view.
Yes. That was another thing that we were pissed off about. We were jaded from the start on this one.
Very funny. All right. So, as you can tell, my betrothed, Hunter Hurst Helmsley, is in the semifinals. Taking on a guy that you just mentioned, JR, was supposed to have a World Wrestling Federation Championship shot tonight. And that is Moadib himself, Ahmed Johnson. Now, JR, how did these two gentlemen get to this point?
Well, of course, your boy had a whole bunch of rigmarole and nonsense, worked his politics his way into this. He had defeated Crush in the qualifier. Ahmed Johnson had actually qualified by defeating Hunter Hurst Helmsley.
What?
Come on. Really? Really? That's how he got in. So what ended up happening was he was given a second chance in the tournament because he complained that he didn't know he could lose by disqualification. And he thought it was unfair. So he got his lawyers involved and was able to get another shot in the tournament. So he moved on and defeated Crush the second time around. And actually, you know what's interesting, Scott? Mm-hmm. There were no qualifying matches. It just started with the quarterfinals. There was only 8 guys.
Really?
So we didn't even have the usual qualifiers into the quarterfinals. So we actually started with 8. The first 4 matches were on TV. So he says he was not properly instructed prior to his match with Ahmed. And then he took Vader's spot because Vader had been injured against Ken Shamrock. So he defeats Crush and advances here for these two men to fight. Now, my question is, was he... I mean, obviously, you know, we know where he's headed in this night. So if he was set up for such big things... Why did they go through all that stuff on Raw? Why not just plug someone else in that spot? Why have him lose a match and then get reinserted? It just didn't make sense to me.
I don't get it either. And I feel like, and we've talked about it over the last few shows, that yes, the mood of the company has changed. Things are a little cooler. But the structure is still very discombobulated.
Mm.
They're not quite sure what to do with it. It's almost like, my God, we have so many guys, and what the hell do we do with all of them? And the mid-card was certainly in that position. So, to be honest with you, I don't have a clue. I don't know what would losing on Raw maybe make him more of a chicken shit? I don't know.
Yeah, it's almost like, I mean, and they say he took Vader's spot, but, I mean, was Vader supposed to win? I don't know. You know, it's all very confusing. It was very confusing.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't get so much, too much work for something that could have been very simple.
Yeah.
Yeah, they overthought it and ended up looking kind of ridiculous in the end.
Yeah, it was weird. And it's like they couldn't have found someone to stick in the match against Ahmed. I mean, I don't get why they needed Helmsley to job out in 3 minutes. So, very weird.
Yeah. And I'm sure you probably thought that going into this match, work rate-wise, was probably going to be quite sparse.
Ahmed, I don't know. I was still in a weird spot with Ahmed at this point. Like, I didn't really think he was... as bad as everyone, you know, as he would end up being, I guess is what I'm trying to say.
Yes.
Like at the time, he was still a pretty big name and pretty light. And I thought for sure, we thought he was definitely winning the tournament. We even had a little cheesy sign that said King Ahmed, hoping that, well, if he won, maybe we'll get on TV or something. But
King Moadib.
Oh, no, King.
But that's what you should have done. You should have done King Ahmed and then just put a series of consonants at the bottom of it. But the match itself was, it was all right. I mean, it wasn't anything great. I was done with Ahmed at this point. I really was. I felt like he had you know, the injury really set him back work rate wise, and just he just seemed so muddled in these last 3 months. So I was done with him. To be honest. And let me tell you something. No one was a bigger Ahmed booster in 96 than I was at the time around our group of friends. I loved Ahmed. And I'm not, you know, I don't think we've ever actually said this, but I know you can't say, well, it's his fault that he hurt his kidneys. You can't say that. But somebody needed to kind of, I don't want to say retrain him, but somebody had to sit with him, Pat, or some good veteran, say, look, Ahmed, I know you're feeling very protective of your back and your kidneys, and, you know, it's not like a knee tear or something. The kidneys are very serious. This is what you need to do. This is how you need to work in the ring now, and it'll work out. It'll be okay. I feel like nobody did that, and all he did was just work all stiff and goofy and sloppy. So I can't believe I'm about to say this, but I don't want to say I blame the company, but I feel like nobody really helped him adapt to an injury like that. And that's why he got so sloppy and messy after that. And the matches were just a disaster. He could have been saved had somebody actually, you know, taught him or not taught him. It's not the right word. Retrained him or just said to him, look, I know you don't want to fall on your back a lot. I know your kidneys are very sensitive. I get that. Let's work this way. Look at Ric Flair. Mm-hmm. Ric Flair had the plane crash. You noticed he always backdropped on his hip for the next freaking 30 years of his career. You adapt. And nobody, I feel like nobody taught him to adapt. And so he became very clumsy and stiff and blocky, action figure.
Yeah, but he was kind of like that anyway before. He was just made a little more controlled. I don't know. He was pretty all over the place before this. He just was a little more contained in a way. But
yeah, I know, but just,
he's just very injury prone. He's just an injury prone guy. And yeah, you know, the bug bit him and it bit everyone involved with him. So I don't know if there's any saving him at this point.
Yeah. Well, no. In my opinion, no. At this point, no, there isn't. And his push went down the tubes. I mean, it was just, there was nothing left for him. China is really the saving grace here. Not saving grace. I still think Helmsley had a good future ahead of him, but China really saved his bacon. Getting crazy heat. You know, you got the chick protecting you, and you know, everyone says she's tougher than he is, and he really, it was a big bonus for him to have her there. Really saved him from God only knows what, because we even said, even though he turned the corner a little bit at the beginning of 97, mm-hmm, nervous that he was going to kind of fade away.
Right.
But China kind of, again, saved him. And the whole thing with Marlena and Goldust and really took him to the next level. And now he's at this next lair and, you know, gets the win, hits the pedigree. I don't know. I think, I wish the whole tournament was on this show. I feel bad for you guys. I feel like you guys got stiffed. There's no reason why the whole tournament could not have been on here. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, although looking at it, I don't know if it would have mattered, honestly. This, you know, this is just a problem we've talked about throughout 97. It was very thin. You know, a lot of the depth was just missing. So I don't know if it would have mattered, honestly, at this point. I think the things that could have enhanced the card just didn't happen due to injuries or whatever else. Like, you know, Bret Hart being injured, couldn't make it back in time. Then we end up not getting the Undertaker Ahmed match, which would have been pretty cool. So as a result, we also don't get Austin and Pillman, and it would have been cool to see Pillman's return. So, you know, there's a lot of things that could have made this show, you know, happen to be a little bit better. But I don't know if adding those two crappy matches from Raw would have really made a difference.
Probably not. But in any event, the Blue Blood moves on, and Ahmed just continues to kind of fall down the ladder with the company. Very unfortunate. Now, while this is going on, what were your thoughts live? Anything going on? Any cool fans, strange fans, anything weird going on?
Well, we didn't
see any foam fingers. What was going on?
Well, the match was 7.5 minutes. I think we missed quite a bit of it, actually, because we were trying to, like I said, we were trying to look for seats, and we actually headed down to the floor, and it was down there. We found two seats right in the floor section, kind of behind the commentary table, right towards the back. And we thought it was going to be awesome, but people kept holding up signs. We could barely see. And then this guy in front of us was just, you know, ridiculous. He just, he had to be by himself. It was this, like, older guy with glasses, and he was, you know, trying to convince us that wrestling was fake, and that the broad could probably beat up both of them if, you know, if they really let her go, and just, like, making all stupid shit like that. And, like, we finally decided, you know what? Sitting way the fuck up at the top in the Euchre seats is better than dealing with this guy the whole time. And other people's signs, you know, holding up the whole time as well. So maybe in retrospect, we should have stayed down there. We probably could have gotten away with it. But I don't know if it would have been worth the nonsense. So we went back up with the plebeians up in the top.
Mm-hmm. And so with Moa Dib losing, what'd you do to your sign? Did you hand it off to some kid or?
I just threw it on the ground. I guess I got it. It was literally just on a piece of paper. It was like the worst sign ever made. I honestly just thought maybe we can somehow sneak it on camera if he actually wins. You know, out of sometimes they would have those planted ones. So I guess when we didn't see any of those, we should have assumed it wasn't happening.
Mm. Oh well. I never thought you guys as sign makers, but like, did you back in the house show days when you went to like the musical tent, or did you guys always carry signs, or was that not a big thing of yours? I never did anything with signs, but
not the musical theater. At the Civic Center a couple times when I was really young, like 10 or 11, we made some signs. Nothing crazy, just little ones, but we did make ones more towards the Raw's War eras. We'll get into like a 98 a couple times we went. We started making some signs. Nothing crazy. Just it depended on our seats. You know, if we had really good seats down on the floor or something, we definitely used them. So.
Oh yeah, I was like that. Yeah, I was like that with my when I'd had house shows or Raws at the New Haven Coliseum. You know, the floor seats were like $29 or something. So my brother and I used to buy them all the time, and I would make the occasional Helmsley sign or anything like that. But all right, so Hunter Hearst Helmsley moves on to the finals of the King of the Ring tournament. So I was excited. Who would his opponent be? Well, that comes up in our next match. The reason JR, mm-hmm. that JR and VKM are alone is because the Jerry the King Lawler is in the tournament.
Yes.
Could you believe that?
No.
I can't either. Why were they still using him? I mean, were they that thin? I mean, weird. And he would take on the now incredibly deep and enigmatic character by the name of Mankind. Very different Mankind. I mean, just look ahead 1 year. And this character with the thing on his hand and the brown outfit and the weird mask. And now we're even deeper into this character. And why is that, JR?
Well, that's because they decided to give him, like we had seen with Goldust or Raw, a little bit of depth, a little bit of intrigue. Mm-hmm. They had him sit down with Jim Ross at a series of interviews where they talked about his past. They showed him as a young man making tapes at home, diving off his roof, and the origins of his Dude Love character. Mm-hmm. They showed his time a little bit in WCW, and then, of course, in Japan as Cactus Jack. And they added a real lot of depth to the Mick Foley Mankind character, and it kind of came out of nowhere, and it really added a lot of fan support to him as well. And when he comes out here, he gets a pretty good pop, and this is the first time really he's presented as a... I'm not going to say he was a face yet. He was kind of a tweener here, but it's the first time where the crowd is really starting to get behind him. Right. But of course, it's the last and final sit-down interview with Jim Ross that really, really left a mark on many people's minds.
Have you ever been treated or have you ever been diagnosed with a multiple personality disorder?
You know, I thought we talked about this when I said I don't believe in doctors. I believe in the body's ability to heal itself. If there's something wrong with my mind, I think I'd be the first one to know.
Don't you think that it's about time in your life where you looked squarely in the mirror and accepted the personal responsibility for who you are? Don't you believe that you yourself have caused and brought on all these problems?
I think it's time for you to maybe start doing your damn job. I think it's time for you to end this facade of journalistic integrity. You know what you tell the people week in and week out? You say, look at Mankind. I don't even know if he feels pain or maybe he likes pain. You see, you're a powerful man, Jimmy. You have got the ability to reach a lot of people, to spread the truth, and you neglect to do it. Let me ask you a couple of questions. What is it about pain that I love? You see, I feel just like every other person. You see that? It hurts. Is it when I can't get up? When my little boy says, Daddy, I want to play ball? and I can't do it? Is that where the fun starts? Is it where a doctor injects a 12-inch needle into the discs in my spine so I can wrestle one more day? Whoopee! Let the party begin! I can't believe you sit here and ask me those questions. Do I bring it on to myself? I haven't done a damn thing to you. All you've done to people is mislead them and let them think that I'm having the time of my goddamn life when I'm in pain. Don't you look at me with that smug look. You make me sick. A man of integrity. I want to smack you.
Of course, he snaps there and puts a mandible claw on JR, and he runs away, basically. Or he rocks a little bit, staring at his hand, and then just walks off. So it was weird, because they positioned him almost to be turning face with all of these promos, and then they kind of have him act like a heel at the end there, so a little weird. But the premise behind it really worked, anyway, because he kind of took off, and people got to really know him. And I don't know if they intended to definitely turn him face, but it happened by proxy, so... And the crowd here is a little bit confused, but they ended up cheering him, and we ended up getting behind Mick here. So,
and how did both these gentlemen get to this point?
Okay, well, Mankind, he defeated Savio Vega, your favorite, and Jerry Lawler defeated Goldust. Kind of interesting there. So,
yes. What did you think of these promos?
I loved them. Oh God, I loved them.
Yeah, I think it was really smart. This is another flipping the finger to WCW, because here's a guy that they just thought was this really good risk-taking stuntman lunatic and never really, you know, gave the guy an opportunity. He cut decent promos, but they never gave him really a chance to really enhance himself. And the best they did was that redonkulous amnesia nonsense that they did. What was that, 93 into 94. And that was just utter crap. But then you saw the evolution of his character in ECW. Not his character, but him, Mick Foley.
Right, yep.
And the evolution of how creative he can be and how much fun he can have and how entertaining it would be for the fans when he is having fun. And here, you just get to see this unbelievable character just enhance himself so much. And I think the fans were evolving too, because I think like 7 years, I wouldn't even say seven, I'll go back 2.5 years before. I don't think anybody would understand what the hell's going on. And I always like using one of your boys, Waylon Mercy, as that example of a good, deep, thoughtful, psychology-driven character that everybody just stared and went, huh? But now, I think the fans are evolving with the product, and they dig this kind of deep, cerebral kind of
I disagree with
character.
You just a little bit here, because I think they actually... They took that mysterious character away from him with these, because when he first came in, don't forget, his character was really fucked and out there. He was this guy who had, you know, he played the piano and he had his fingers smashed by his mom and all this other crap. He could, you know, sent to live in a sewer with a rat that was his only friend. And I mean, his original story was you know, closer to that of the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles than of any other wrestler. So it was
true.
You know, it was kind of whacked. So I think this actually added some human side to him, and you know, there's depth to it, but it's not this bizarre, weird kind of mindfuck character that he was a year ago. Here, he's just now some, you know, deranged kid who ate worms and dove off his roof and got the shit kicked out of him in Japan. You know, there's more of a story. Now you understand why he's so fucked. So, if anything, I think they dumbed it down in a way. I don't think they made it tougher to understand.
So, you enjoyed the promos, but you thought that it might have exposed him.
No, I thought it was great. I'm just debating your point, where you're saying, all of a sudden now the fans are into this, you know, they wouldn't have been into this kind of character 2 years before. You're acting like he's deeper or something. I'm just saying I don't think he's deeper at all. I think they've added more, they've made him more obvious. There's a reason why he's behind this, instead of this all obscure, weird backstory he had the year before.
Okay,
so you're
saying that you think the fans needed a little explanation. Like they needed to kind of.
I don't know if they needed it. I'm just you said that the fans wouldn't have dug this character 2 years ago, and that now the fans are evolving and they get this kind of character. I'm saying it's the opposite. I'm saying the fans are accepting this because they've kind of made it more obvious and more humanizing, where it's not this weird, demented character anymore. I'm not saying they should or shouldn't have done it. I'm not saying I liked it or hated it. I'm just kind of, you know, being contrarian to what you were saying, because I don't agree with what you said. That's all.
I don't know. I mean, I think the interviews. See, I don't think the interviews were as obvious as they.
Of course they were. They basically said this kid was fucked as a kid. He, you know, he jumped off a roof. Yeah, you know, he ate worms and he was an outcast and he ended up getting to wrestling and he went to Japan and took place in these death matches. And then, you know, he took on this character because he's, you know, deranged. He's out to save mankind. And he talks about having a son. Of course, they added a much more human feel to him. And I think that made people, you know, associate more with him. You know, it made kids that were outcasts, you know, kind of cling to this guy more now.
Well, as maybe they were
some dude who lived in a sewer with a rat, you know.
So maybe they were anticipating a face turn then. Or maybe they were trying to make a face turn out of it.
They had to have been. I mean, yeah. And especially the way he's booked here is an underdog.
No, I could see that. I could see that point. Just felt like it almost like they were turning the page with him now.
No, they definitely are.
And maybe, all right, well, you know, now that you think of it, maybe it wasn't as mysterious, but I don't know. It just seemed like they took more time to do it than they would have in the old, like, even a few years earlier, they would have just had him attack a heel and now he's a face.
Oh, of course. They're going through more lengths for the character development, but that has nothing to do with the fans taking to him, I don't think.
Well, I don't know. It's interesting. It's a good debate. It's a good discussion because obviously he took the ball and ran with it, which we all benefited from. So we could at least say that.
Hulk Hogan, we coming for you, nigga.
I don't think it would have fit if he said that to JR.
No, probably not.
I don't think it would have fit. No. All right. In any event, Mankind is in the semifinals, and like you said, how were you as a crowd with him? Did you know?
Well, if you go back and watch the match, I mean, you could see it's a little quiet because I don't think a lot of the fans knew what to do. Lawler obviously was pretty much straight heel, so and no one ever was behind him. So obviously Mankind positioned a little bit as a face. Now he doesn't have Paul Bearer with him anymore, but he's still kind of crying about Uncle Paul. So it's just odd. It's just, I don't know, that is really working as a tweener. But it was good because they made it, instead of him all of a sudden just becoming a nice guy, they slowly did it where the crowd started to get behind him, and he started this feud with Hunter Hearst Helmsley coming up. And so there's a lot going on that kind of slowly turned him that way instead of just, like you said, just him attacking someone or he gets attacked and turns.
Right.
So I think it was smart the way they did it. It just, you know, the reaction of this match, you know, basically takes the bullet for it, but whatever. It was 10 minutes and, I don't think it probably shouldn't even been this long, but Lawler eats the claw and, probably the most obvious finish of any match ever. One was, so
I still don't understand why Lawler was in this slot, and there had to have been,
I really think it was depth. I don't know. I mean, looking at it, I don't know, unless you break up the, you know, Owen and Bulldog and put them in the tournament, but I don't think they wanted to job them out. So
they could have put Billy Gunn in there. I don't know. Could have put some other random heel. I don't know. Just taking him off the, because I'm not a big fan of, and I wasn't like this even when I was a kid watching NWA. I'm not a big fan of dual play by play, and JR had already passed through the whole heel thing, and Vince was Vince. So I don't know. I felt
but JR was more. I thought more of a color guy when he needed to be, only because he adds a lot of the backgrounds and the stories and whatnot. So no. I think it's okay.
I just don't. I guess there was nobody around. I guess there wasn't anybody else, huh? I guess not.
I don't. Yeah. I mean, like you said, they could have. Well, I mean, our next match, you could have put May Crush in there or something. But I don't know. I mean, I guess there's someone you could have stuck in there. Just probably wouldn't matter. But yeah, I think taking Lawler out of the booth and putting him in that match probably hurt it more than helped things. So
yeah. All right. So like you said, Mankind wins with the Mandible Claw. So now our final of the tournament: Hunter Hearst Helmsley and Mankind.
Yeah, something I definitely would not have expected going in. I thought, I mean, I guess that shows my mindset that I thought Mankind was still being positioned as a heel because I thought it was going to be Ahmed and Mankind in the finals. So,
yeah. Okay. So
I suck at predicting King of the Rings, by the way. I feel like every year I was always wrong on who was going to win.
You were good with Rumbles, right? But
yeah,
King of the Rings
were. Okay.
King of the Rings were a bit of a... Well, you know what the difference is? Rumbles, they have to set in stone, and it's almost sometimes too obvious. King of the Rings, at the time, you know what the hell they were, you know, what the hell they were thinking. Or
I think Brett was the only one I probably expected. I definitely thought Razor was winning 94. I definitely thought Shawn was winning 95. I definitely thought Vader was winning 96. So, and I thought Ahmed was winning here. So
okay.
Oh, for life.
All right. Yeah. All right. So before our next match, one of the more memorable, probably one of your few happy moments of this pay-per-view.
Yes. You want to hear it?
Yes, please.
Okay.
I guess Brian, the first question is whether or not you feel somewhat responsible for the matchup we're going to see here tonight between Stone Cold Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels.
Responsible? Hell yes! I reeled that sucker right in. But it was Brett who inspired me when he whispered in my ear.
Well, then why are you here tonight?
I'm here work for the family, and I'm here to watch that boy toy violate that rat's ass so I can see what's going to be left for me tomorrow night. It's been a long time, Steve, but I was told, seek and ye shall find.
He takes after you, calls him Steve. It's been a long time, Steve.
Take that, Todd Weber. You and JP, of course, were marking out like crazy.
Oh yeah, we were over the moon. Because... I mean, we both adored, you know, both of these guys. So we were when this happened is, you know, I really think one of the travesties. Well, I guess we'll talk about it more as we move through '97. But one of the travesties to me is that these two didn't get a prolonged feud. They kind of had a lot of start and stops.
Yes, yeah, they
and
did.
This match would take place 2 weeks later on Raw. That was part of the deal, but we'll get to that later. You know, I feel like they never got the big pay per view match and. Just the brawl here that, well, it was really more Austin just attacking Pillman and dunking his head in the toilet, but the, just that chemistry was just so good, and, like, it just sucks that we couldn't get more of a feud between them two, and, you know, it might have happened if Pillman survived into 98, I'm guessing something would have happened at that point, but it's just too bad. We don't really get an extended pay-per-view here, feud for them.
Yeah, here's my theory on it, and then I have a funny question to ask you. My theory on it is, or the reasoning is, because unfortunately due to Pillman's injury, the two of them were never on even ground. Like Austin at this point, and this is not a knock on Pillman, so don't get mad, but it's almost like he didn't have time to go down the ladder to face Pillman. He had other priorities.
Yeah.
You know, it's not a knock on Brian by any stretch.
I know. Just sucks that they couldn't, you know. And
right.
Well, it would have here, though. I mean, he wasn't going to go down the ladder to face him here, so it just didn't work out.
Yeah, that's what, but we don't understand why. I mean, as we go through the rest of the card, we'll still ponder this. But, yeah, I mean, here it's not a problem. I feel like he was not even a priority for the show. Obviously, King of the Ring, The focus is usually it's who wins the tournament and whoever is in the title match.
And it was supposed to be Brett and Shawn. I mean, that was supposed to be it. But, I mean, Austin Pillman, though. I think you're understating it a little bit, I think, because Pillman had just come back, but it was a pretty hot program. Because remember, Pillman jumped him in his return on that Raw we reviewed.
Right.
And, you know, they were really going at it on Raw leading up to this. So I think, you know, it was probably match number three on the pecking order, which is still a pretty big deal when you're talking about a world title match and then Brett versus Shawn, first match since WrestleMania 12. So, you know, this was big, you know, big time stuff. And I'd say this even ranked above the tournament itself, Austin and Pillman. So.
Oh, I'm not disagreeing. My whole point is, I agree. I would like to have seen it. My point is, that's what I think their philosophy was, that they've probably felt that Austin had other things, but it makes no sense. I'm agreeing with you. I'm just saying, I'm kind of trying to rationalize what their thinking was. I don't give a shit. I would love to have seen the two beat the hell out of each other. It would've been awesome.
No, I know what you're saying. I'm just, no. I think the match was actually positioned higher than many people realize.
Yeah, I think so too. I think so too. Now, this is a funny question. I'm asking this strictly, and this is for those that don't know us, this is not weird. He understands the question. JR understands the question. For those that know us, clearly this is something that needs to be asked. But of the myriad of sports teams, sports team jerseys and T-shirts that the two of you own, did anybody have a wrestling shirt on that night? Did he have one of his NWOs? What did JP pull out for this special evening? I know what you usually wear, but what special outfit did he have for this evening? Oakland A's?
I honestly don't. I don't remember, honestly. I don't know if you could even see in that free-for-all video. I know you can see the Orioles hat. That's about it. I'm not sure. I really don't remember.
Oakland A's, Red Sox. He was like a walking, majestic catalog.
I'm guessing his mom went to like Bob's or something and just cleaned them out.
Just had to ask that. All right. Our next match, I can't even explain this, to be honest.
This was never even announced prior to the show. I didn't even know what was happening until I got there. We bought the program, and they used to still insert the card with the matches on it.
Yeah.
And this was on there, and I was like, what the fuck? Where did this match come from? Yeah. So, very weird. Very weird.
Very random. And this is where the whole Lawler thing comes into play.
Yes.
The match is Goldust. I just did the... Yeah, I know. He's not even at that point anymore. It's not even...
No, I know. Yeah.
It's not even worth doing it. That's why I didn't bother. Taking on Crush. Yes, that's right. Goldust versus Crush. And you're thinking, the hell?
Yeah, and Goldust didn't have any extended feud going on with the Nation or anything, but...
Right.
This is weird. It's a very random match. And like I said, I don't know why they didn't stick Crush in the match with Mankind instead of Lawler. And you could have done Goldust Lawler. At least they had some history.
Yeah, I guess. I mean, yeah.
Because Lawler, you know, had pinned Goldust to get to the tournament. I guess that takes him out of contention for the match.
Yeah. But again, this is what we were talking about, Crush being, being maybe in that match with Mankind instead. I don't know. Very weird. Very weird. The match itself is, you know, pretty standard. Nothing really earth-shattering.
No, the crowd is actually pretty into it for some reason. I can't understand why. I guess Goldust is just pretty over, but I remember being bored out of my fucking mind for this match. 10 minutes. If you go back and watch it now, it is not much at all. Goldust wins with a DDT, which is also random. The only thing I think of is that Goldust was set to play a pretty decent-sized role at our next pay-per-view, although even at this point, I don't know if he was actually scheduled for that match. We'll get there next week, but... He, I don't know, maybe they felt he needed some rehabbing. You know, he come off a couple pay-per-view losses to Helmsley, so maybe they thought he just needed to get a win on pay-per-view. And other than that, the only other reason I can think of is they just needed bodies to fill spots.
I guess. I mean, it just makes no sense at all. I don't know. Anyway, like I said, the match is...
it's not worth really wasting time on.
Yeah, when you guys has to... This must have been the time to head to the pisser, I'm assuming.
I think we were just sitting there clawing our eyes out.
Getting some nachos or some fine Civic Center fare.
Wonder if, you know, I think George was there. Schilling's Merchandise. George, a merchandise guy.
Oh, that's right, yeah. Yeah.
Get your big-time wrestling souvenirs, yeah. Big-time wrestling.
Any good stuff? Do you remember anything? Anything good?
Jesus! You're really pushing me tonight. I don't know.
Wow, this show was just as... You remember? You remember how many tiles were on the floor in '94?
Yes.
This one, you barely remember even being there.
Come on, you expecting to remember merchandise and what I was wearing? I don't know. This is fucking 15 years ago.
I don't know. Just trying to guess to see if it was as memorable as you thought it was, and clearly it was not. So,
no.
All right, Goldust wins, and that's that. All right. Next up is actually a very highly entertaining...
Another weird match, though.
Yeah, weird match, but at least a bunch of good guys. You're all a real man can need. I never asked for it. This is love, girl. This is more than a crush. Yeah. It was Harlem at the Ruckers. Yeah. I saw you with your man, smiling. I just realized, does that first line say I was meeting you at Rutgers?
I thought he said Rutgers, like Rucker Park, maybe.
He's going to go shoot some hoops with, what, Fat Joe?
Was that you that had the coach bag in your hands, like he says in that?
Yes. The coach bag, holding my basketball as I'm going to Rucker Park. All right. Of course, my PIC is playing that because my other this was one of those kind of shows.
Mm-hmm.
Hawk and Animal, the Legion of Doom, teaming with... Go ahead, say it the Vince way.
Psycho Sid?
Yes, he's still with the company.
He's back. Well, he'd been off TV until the week before this show. Yeah. He actually showed up on Raw and faced The Undertaker in a rematch from WrestleMania. Undertaker won in 5 minutes, beat him with a clothesline and a tombstone. That was Sid's return. He just randomly popped up after injury, and then he gets stuck into this match here.
Yeah, and he's taking on the remaining three members, well, not remaining, but the other three members of the Hart Foundation that are not... have either been beat up or injured.
Right.
Of course, Brian Pillman's head was shoved in the toilet, in the turlet. And, of course, the Hitman, Bret Hart, was still injured. He still had the knee problems, thus another reason that this show was jumbled all over the place. So the remaining three healthy members, the British Bulldog, the Rocket Owen Hart, and the Anvil Jim Neidhart, taking on the Legion of Doom and Psycho Sid. And this is... It's kind of a sad evening, JR. I mean, I got a lot of LOD and Helmsley love all over the place, but kind of a sad night is our man, the man who rules the world, will
this
no longer be here. Yeah,
so
done.
Sad. Yeah, he would pop up on Raw one other time after this, and that's it. He doesn't actually wrestle again, so this is his last match. And I'm surprised they, you know, they could have, if they needed bodies to eat time, why not do a tag title match here? And then do Owen or do Sid versus Neidhart separately or something like that, you know?
Right.
It's kind of weird.
Put on a free-for-all or something if it's not
it's another odd match. And
yeah,
you know, this leads me to again to next month where I think maybe Goldust wasn't supposed to be in that match. I think maybe Sid was, but yeah, just a weird match again. You know, no titles on the line. This makes this card feel lamer. You know, it's like it's already lame enough with all the changes and you know stuff getting thrown around. Now all of a sudden you take you know, tag titles out of the, you know, we were supposed to have two great tag title matches. First, it was supposed to be Bullock and Owen against Shawn and Austin, who, as we'll talk about, I guess, should we just talk about it now, or we want to wait?
Well, yeah, because obviously it happened at before this, so.
Well, I don't know if you want to talk about it when they fight later. But.
Oh, yeah, we could. Yeah, well, okay. Yeah, we could. Yeah, they do fight later. So, yeah, big moment happened on Raw a few weeks before this show. We'll get to that in a minute. But
so, anyway, they don't have that match. And then, you know, the second one was supposed to be LOD versus Bullock and Owen. I mean, I guess unless they didn't want to have, you know, LOD lose another title match, maybe? I don't know. Well, yeah, I guess they wouldn't even been champions, so I guess it doesn't matter anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm way off on this. All right, forget everything I said the last 4 minutes.
That's okay. That's understandable. You're trying to remember what you know, AAA baseball t-shirt Jim was wearing that night. Maybe paw socks or something. Maybe he was wearing Referee Rich's batting helmet. I don't know. All right. Do you have the review in front of you? Because I'm about to quiz you again. Usually you're already looking at it.
Yes,
so.
I have it in front of me.
All right, never mind. 16 matches that Sid has wrestled in his WWF career, and his final record, a very underwhelming. I think you said this was going to be the 2012 record of the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Yes.
5-11.
Yes.
Yes. 0-1 at the Rumble. 0-2 if you count his loss at the Rumble in 92 as well, in the match itself. 0-2 at WrestleMania, but they were both main events. You don't get that very often. 0-2 at King of the Ring. 1-0 at SummerSlam. 1-1 at Survivor Series, 1-3 at the pre-titled In Your Houses, and 2-1 at other pay-per-view.
Yeah, of course, his big run was 96 is where he picked up the majority of his wins. So
yes, yep. So 5-11, and of course he has a 3-chapter career, pretty much July 91 to April 92, and then March 95 to January 96, and then July 96 to now. And, of course, you know, had some high points, winning the title at the 96 Survivor Series, beating Bret Hart. You know, not many people beat Shawn and Bret back-to-back months, but
he did.
And then the low points, which was pretty much every match in 1995, for the most part. So long, Sid. We will miss you. Welcome. He'll be heading out now to play men's open sea softball in West Memphis in the Sea League on Thursday nights in the Beer League. But, you know, the match was okay. I enjoyed it. I like all six of these guys, obviously. So it was fun. It was a fun watch. Even if it made no sense or we didn't know where the hell it came from. At least
I just remember feeling very blah. Like, you know, we were already not hyped and this match didn't really add to it. And it was just kind of like, all right, you know, a six man. Big deal. You know what I mean? This wasn't, I don't know. It was just the whole thing just felt flat. Owen ends up pinning Sid with a top rope sunset flip. So Sid takes the loss in his final match. Kind of weird because the crowd was kind of into Sid, and then you just kind of expect a non-title six-man match like this. You kind of expect the faces to win, so it was just weird. I know they wanted to keep the Hart Foundation strong, especially with Brett off the show and Pillman off the show. So I guess that's why they got the win, but it's just very, very weird. The whole show is just very odd.
It is. It has been very strange. So there you go. The Hart Foundation keeping their heat. I mean, it made sense for them to win.
Yeah.
I understand your philosophy about, you know, these
kind of
matches.
This hasn't been much to cheer about on the show. That's the problem. And it's like you take another thing away. It's like, all right, we can't even cheer for Sid now, you know?
Yeah, I know. Okay. Next up, we have the much-anticipated, half-sarcasm there, finals of our King of the Ring.
Yeah!
It's amazing how you knock me off my feet. Every time you come around me, I get weak. Oh, yeah. Nobody ever made me feel this way. Oh. You kiss my lips and then you take my breath away. So, I wanna know. Yeah, I'd like to know so I can be
off. This is the backup song for two matches.
Two things. Number one, I was so wrapped up in my emotions that you made a song. I thought you were going to have a song with no lyrics. So it's just going to be, for like 3 minutes. And then finally he sings. And actually, the lyrics are... How long did it take you to find that one? The lyrics seem to make perfect sense.
Well, you know what's funny is this was originally the song I was going to use. And then after we tell the wedding, we heard the other one. I thought it was too much, too funny. Yeah. So maybe we'll start rotating. I don't know. This was my original plan for this when we first started. When this man came into our lives on these reviews, so I thought this one does fit it very well.
Yes, and it's nice to actually hear a song and talk about Helmsley without thinking of Matt Rotella shaking and shimmying in the middle of a dark room. So thank you. All right. Yes, Hunter Hearst Helmsley taking on Mankind for the King of the Ring trophy. Were you guys excited at all for this match?
I guess. Yeah. our excitement level's down.
You guys had checked out at this point.
Yeah, we were pretty much like, oh, what the fuck? We were like ready for Raw at this point.
Let's call you. Let's call your dad. Let's call Wayland up and get the hell out of here.
That's too bad. You know, it's a big pay-per-view. It's such a hot year, and it just sucked that things got so fucked. You know, it was just bad luck on our part, really. Mm. We just happened to see the one show where everyone was injured and things were out of control backstage, so... You know, we kind of get the shit end. There's so many memorable pay-per-views in 97. You know, the Rumble, Mania. As bad as Mania was, there's still so many, you know, crazy moments. And, of course, Fischetti was at all the crazy ones. He was the SummerSlam Survivor Series. So, and then there's Bad Blood. You know, there's so many great pay-per-views. Stampede. So many good. And we got, like, the, you know, the worst one possible. So,
yeah, pretty much.
I think only Jay Womette probably suffered more than we did Revenge of the Taker. So,
yeah. All right. So, obviously, I was looking forward to this match. I was looking forward to seeing Helmsley win the King of the Ring. Nothing against Mick. I like Mick, but I liked Helmsley more.
Yeah, I mean, it was obvious against... Well, actually, maybe not. Maybe it wasn't that obvious. Because Mankind, you kind of look at him, you're like, well, this guy's getting kind of a push. He's getting these promos, and their fans are cheering him. And I don't think it would have been that big of a surprise for him to steal this here and kind of be like the weird, whacked-out king. But as we'll see, his character becomes kind of that of a lovable loser as the era goes along. So it makes sense that he gets abused here. And the match goes 20 minutes. It was a long, long match, and it's even long now, and I like it. It's okay. It's just long. It really is. These two would, you know, really build their chemistry over the following weeks and months, but here, they still kind of get things together. Of course, China plays a pretty big role, and she ends up smashing Mankind with the scepter and kind of handing the match to Helmsley with a pedigree.
I definitely think, as much as I, you know, I was very excited, of course. Very excited that Helmsley was the King of the Ring. But I agree with you that they could have gotten this done in like 12 minutes or 13 minutes.
Well, like I said, they had to eat time. There's only seven matches. One was added at the last minute. It's just, you know, they had to fill time, basically. That's all it was.
And none of those matches were incredibly long anyway.
No.
So, I mean, at this point, let me see, the shows were still at 7, right? Still 7 o'clock. So you figure at this point was what, like... 8:30, and you're probably
really
like, wow.
I can show you're asking me to remember the time of exact matches. I don't know.
Did you wear sneakers?
Probably.
Flip-flops? No. I mean, they definitely could have gotten this done in like 12 minutes, but like you said, they needed to milk it a little bit. So, these guys, and this is another one of those foundation feuds that we would see build to what would happen in 1998.
Mm-hmm.
But right now, of course, very rudimentary.
Yeah. I mean, it's stiff, and of course they have the big spot on the table, and then poor Vince and JR have to sit at the broken table for the rest of the show as well, so.
Yeah, and the other big moment is that, the linchpin of the match is that every time Mankind gets a foothold on the match or may get a big moment, China comes in to ruin it, and you get used to that. She does it here, she'll do it, you know, over the next couple of pay-per-views that they meet, and we'll obviously get more into those as we get there. But that's like the other little linchpin of the in-ring portion of the feud is that every time he would about to hit the mandible claw or he's going to do a big move off the top rope or something, you know, China would trip him or hit him in the head or punch him in the face or something like that. So that was one of the big things that would continue that feud going along. But yes, indeed, Hunter Hearst Helmsley is your 1997 King of the Ring. And then I was upset. I wanted a coronation. I wanted a throne and a scepter and a crown and everything. He did get the crown.
I mean, like you said, you know, it makes sense, I guess, because of the Attitude Era and everything else. So I could see why they didn't do it. It's just kind of lame. Like, Todd Pentgill just comes to the ring with the crown and everything, and then Helmsley just uses it to beat on Mankind with. So it's just kind of odd and just anticlimactic. This whole pay-per-view feels thrown together and half-assed, and that didn't help things. That just kind of felt like, all right, it was a crown. Oh, I'm going to beat Mankind with it. Okay, see you later. It was just like,
yeah.
I don't know. He didn't even give, like, a speech or anything. It's just odd.
Yeah. Yeah, it's unfortunate that it didn't have more kind of sizzle to it, but eh. At least we have a winner. It's a good heel, but Mankind, I think him losing benefited him more than him winning.
Yeah.
Because I think fans felt sympathetic and Helmsley was kind of a douche. So yeah, I think it worked out from a psychology perspective. But unfortunately, you know, the match had to eat up time and it was, you know, 19 minutes of these two guys is at this time.
Yeah.
Obviously they would meet many moons later and we would have taken 40 minutes of it, but not here. So Helmsley wins and your tournament's over.
Yeah. That's it already. Two matches to go.
As mentioned, JR, you were getting excited for Raw the next night, which I don't think was in Providence. I'll have to check where Raw was.
Of course it wasn't in Providence. Why didn't it in Providence?
Yeah, no, they didn't do those back then.
It was in Hartford.
Oh, Hartford. Okay.
Because that's a very infamous Raw with Hartford. Yeah, that's the infamous backstage fight.
Yes. I did not go to that show. At this point, I wasn't going to Hartford a lot. I was mostly staying in New Haven. All right.
There you go. Everyone can check that off as well. Scott's locale on July.
Yes,
June 9th.
Yes, I was not in Hartford on July 9th, so it wasn't my fault. Whatever went on backstage. Anyway, before the next match, out came the one member of the Hart Foundation who was unable to compete, and that is mm-hmm. the head of the Hart Foundation.
No, they all come out.
Well, they all come out, but obviously the one that had needed something to say was the leader, Bret the Hitman Hart. Who
this might have been the most heat on the night when these five came out and kind of get everyone the most excited, and Bret kind of... You know, rips into Vince and JR ringside and then just goes on about basically U.S. versus Canada. And he challenges any five men to a 10-man tag team at the next pay-per-view in Calgary. And this was like he just, you know, whipped it out and pissed all over us a little bit more. Like, okay, you couldn't fight tonight, but now you're already setting up the match for next month where we're not going to get to see you. So, I mean, obviously we know why it was the next month because it was in Calgary. Right. But it just felt like a real slap in the face for them to do this.
Yeah.
But, I mean, I guess, you know, the story was Bret's knee wasn't quite finished healing yet. So that's why he couldn't wrestle here tonight. But, you know, a lot of heat, a good segment, just kind of felt depressing that he came out and said that.
Now, did you think that... That the feud was. I had a question totally went out of my head when you were finishing your sentence. Oh, I know what it was. How about it's very ironic and that at this point the hottest heels in the company and the next month pay per view was indeed in Calgary. I mean, it was almost like how would they have thunk it? You know what I mean? Like,
how far in advance they booked that show in Calgary.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that? In January, when they were doing the pay-per-view schedule and they were planning July's pay-per-view at the Saddle Dome, that was actually going to happen. Pretty amazing. So you were torn then, JR. You were happy to see the Hart Foundation because, you know, they were your boys and they were the awesome heel faction. But at the same time, they were kind of kicking you and JP in the gut. Nah, we're not wrestling, but join us next month. Bye.
it just felt like a slap. Like I said, this whole show felt like a throwaway to me when we were there, and this just didn't help things, so.
All right. Now
we really were just waiting for Raw because Austin and Pillman were supposed to fight the next night.
Yep,
that's we were really just looking forward to that, and we just wanted to get the hell out of there. But we still had two matches to go, and this next one was one we were looking forward to quite a bit. So,
right, and that is at the time, let's say who the two guys are: Stone Cold Steve Austin, and wrestling his first pay-per-view match. Since January, and that is the Heartbreak Kid, Shawn Michaels.
Yeah, his knee injury and his smile returned. So his knee injury rehabbed, and he started his first match back on TV. Of course, he had been hanging around since like Mania on TV, pretty much.
Right.
So just kind of being a shit stirrer. And he had the attack by Bret Hart back in April. And he steps back in the ring on the 5/26/97 Raw, where he and Steve Austin were forced to tag team up and face Owen Hart and David Boy Smith. Of course, they each told, you know, they had a gorilla on Zoom, put them in a match, and they each tried to find subs instead, and they ended up, you know, being forced into the match. So a tremendous match, 13/25, one of the most famous Raw matches of all time, of course. It's featured on a couple DVDs and widely considered to be one of the best Raw matches ever. So Steve Austin and Shawn Michaels won the tag team titles from Owen and Bulldog.
What?
And, yes, craziness. So we have new tag team champions. Bret Hart was up on the ramp. Austin, of course, left Shawn Michaels to get beaten on by the Hart Foundation because he took his belt up the ramp to attack Bret. as Owen Pillman, Bulldog, and Neidhart all beat on Michaels as well. So, and of course, the reason the match on this show changed was because LOD was supposed to fight for the tag titles, but since they were no longer the champions, they took the match off the card. So at least they kind of explained it.
Right.
But and they did say if Austin and Michaels won, they would face the Legion of Doom the next week on Raw, and they did. LOD won by countout because the champions started fighting each other on the floor.
That was a match I was looking forward to, actually. Mm-hmm. LOD against Stone Cold and Shawn. That's...
And so, of course, as we mentioned, it was originally supposed to be Bret Hart versus Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin versus Brian Pillman. Bret Hart came out and announced, I believe it was the week right before the show, he came out and announced that his knee wouldn't be healed. He wasn't going to be cleared to wrestle. So what ended up happening was Brian Pillman starts chatting away and says, oh, you know, I'll gladly step out of the match and you let you guys face each other since you can't get along, and then we'll fight in a couple weeks on Raw. And after some prodding and goading, they ended up switching the match up to Steve Austin versus Shawn Michaels. And the Hart Foundation played it up like it was like, kind of like a master plan that they got these two to fight, you know, partners to be at each other's throats. So,
and 22 minutes and it ended up being a really good match.
It was, and I feel bad because, you know, I didn't like it at the time. I was just so jaded and angry. So I didn't really give it the credit it was due. And until I watched it, you know, it's probably like 6 or 7 years later when our boy Grimace hooked us up with the compilation tapes in the early days of our trading.
Grimace, yeah, our Grimace. Pal.
You know, I think he listens to the show, Grimace. If you do, please leave us a line somewhere. I thought I read on some board where he commented that he listened to our pay-per-view reviews. So.
Oh, good.
Anyway, Grimace, if he remembers, I was the one that gave him the whole 1997 season of Raw. So, anyway, Grimace, of course, gave us a tape, and this match happened to be on it. And even though I'd seen it a couple times, I really decided to sit down and watch it, you know, for real. And I accepted that it's much better than I always gave it credit for. I always thought it was stupid because I hated the finish. And watching, these guys really put on a great match.
They did. Obviously, Austin was in his groove in the ring, continuing. And, ooh, excuse me. Wow.
Jesus.
Just trying to hold that in. My God.
Lord. Oof. Did you piss yourself on that one?
Oh, God. Woo.
Better check your underwear.
And I was going to make a joke, but I don't know if you saw the campaign yet, but... if you, by the way, see it. It's hilarious.
Okay. Yeah, I wanted to see it. I just haven't had a chance.
Saw it today. Oh, my God. Very, very funny. Will Ferrell, as usual, is best. Zach Galifianakis. Is that how you say his name? Galifianakis. Very funny. Anyway. Yes, very good. Austin in his, obviously in his run right now as a top flight worker in the ring. Mm-hmm. Shawn. And, it was very stiff. I just love the psychology. It was kind of back and forth. They were kind of working each other over, you know, with some chain wrestling and then kind of like trying to find openings that weren't there. And it was just a very well done match. For those that haven't seen it, it is on a pay-per-view. It is on a DVD. What DVD, I don't know. But it is on a DVD.
I can tell you in a minute. Go ahead.
I want to say it's on one of Stone Cold's two. I think it's on the Legacy one, the 3-disc. I don't think it's on any of Sean's.
But... I'll just find out, so you don't have to keep guessing. So just move on.
Was I in the store when I bought that DVD? I'm not. Oh, anyway, no. I'm
Jesus.
Okay. It was a great match, and obviously both guys tag.
It's on the Legacy of Stone Cold Steve Austin and Best of King of the Ring.
Okay. Ah, that's where I watched that match on the Best King of the Ring.
Oh, fucking A! All right, we got it. You watched the match on DVD.
That was at the. I got that at the FYE at the Danbury yes. Mall. No. This.
I don't do any tricks.
I don't do any tricks, not knowing where I am and what shows. What if he was in the King of the Ring tournament? You guys would have loved that.
I didn't know who he was at that point, so
yeah, that's
I would
true.
Not
so
have
had no
it.
Clue.
I would have been like, why is this old bastard on this show?
And why is there a trampoline?
Why is this guy with salt and pepper hair and a spotty goatee refereeing this match with a pink shirt on? That's what I would have wanted to know.
All right. Great match. Working back and forth. Crowd's crazy. I remember the crowd. I don't know about you two, but... seemed like the crowd was really into it.
Yeah, they were, and especially one young Special Olympian who falls over the railing. Yes. So angry with a Shawn Michaels shirt on, and of course, it was kind of cool. Shawn walks over and walks him up the aisle, and they bring him backstage, so it was kind of a nice little moment.
Yeah. You could tell HBK had been a few months, he was just kind of getting his sea legs, if you will, but didn't take long. I hated the ending, all the referees and all that nonsense.
Yeah, they have one referee come in and Austin hits him with a stunner, and another one comes out, Sean super kicks him, and then they end up just going to a double DQ when the third ref comes out. So I get the finish here. I actually understand it. You know, they booked themselves into a corner. They were stuck in where they wanted to deliver you know, a very good match with these guys being out, you know, with Brett right. being out, Pillman being taken out. So yeah, you know, they didn't want either of these guys to lose. They had to keep them both strong. And, you know, the double DQ actually made sense that these two could just, the whole story leading into this was they could not get along at all. So,
right.
I get it.
Yeah. But it was a fun match.
Yeah.
I will say that. So definitely get one of those DVD sets or maybe find it on YouTube. But it really is a very good match. I would consider the highlight match of the show. Even if it had no real legitimate backstory, it's just they just couldn't stand each other. Otherwise, as a standalone match, obviously the best of the card and one that you should definitely check out if you haven't seen it. So the two of the hottest guys, both faces, and
things would change dramatically the next night. I mean, these two seem to be rolling as tag champs, and you know, you figured they were going to obviously be part of that big 10-man tag, just the way the stage was set by Bret Hart. But we'll get to this next week. What the fallout from the night after this show?
Yes,
the backstage mess that occurred.
Yeah, exactly. So
things were a lot of upheaval this time. I really can't wait until we have Kevin Kelly back on.
Yeah,
He's hopefully going to be joining us for the week. The throwback before Survivor Series we have him scheduled for.
I believe so. It was either that or Bad Blood.
Yeah, it's around one of those. So, we're hoping to have Kevin back on, and we really want to get into a lot of this stuff because there's so much turmoil backstage and so many things going on. We got to catch up with him. So,
yeah, but what a great match though. Definitely the match of the night.
Oh, easily, yeah. If anything, despite the finish, it probably should have been last because at this point, we really wanted to leave based on what was coming up next.
Yeah. Yes. Exactly. All right. And for those that are reading our reviews, reading the review along with us, Bigelow34.proboards.com, you know, does Jim know that you compared him to the guy that was to the kid that fell off?
No, I don't think so.
Probably had the same shirt, right?
Yeah, same shirt. Yeah, a lot of the same Shawn Michaels memorabilia, I'm sure.
Yes, I'm sure. Jim definitely had a pair of those Hart glasses, didn't he? He had to have.
It was not as bad as the life-size poster of Shawn Michaels he had up in his room.
Yeah, I wouldn't have had that either. Yeah. No. All right. So finally, we get to our main event.
Hey, PTB Nation. It is now time for the Rob Houston Memorial Hacksaw Jim Duggan Update.
What's up, bitches? Vincent Kennedy McMahon Jr. here with your Hacksaw Jim Duggan update. I fired Sugar Tits and his bitch wife because I'm sick and tired of listening to them and their sugar-covered fingers. Now let's get to that coked-up, cross-eyed cunt Jim Duggan when he left me in WCW and went to WWF. Wait a minute, I'm all fucked up now. I think he went to WCW when he went down there to wrestle for Ted Turner. Not a big fan of this piece of shit. On June 7th, 1997, Ogdenburg, New York. I don't even know what the fuck that is. You think I'd ever run that dump? He defeated Michael Wall Street. Is that supposed to be a joke on me, Turner? VK Wall Street? June 8th, he defeated that same piece of shit. Who do these people think they are ripping off my house show model having the same match month after month and week after week? God damn it, Criscolo. Saturday night, Dalton, Georgia. He defeated Mike Enos. Who the hell goes to Georgia? We go there once a year. If that. Fuck that. This is Vince Kennedy McMahon, and that's your Jim Duggan update, you fucking piece of shit.
I think it would have been better if it said, "Who the hell is Mike Enos?" Yes. That would have been even better.
He may have.
Keep him. We're hiring him. He's okay. The greatest Duggan update guy ever. Thank God we got rid of Moby Dick and what are the other ones? Sugar Tits and Sugar Whale, whatever the hell they're in. Goodbye. Hit the bricks.
I think
Arita, 50 Vince, Shades of Sugar somewhere else.
Vince may have had more to say, but I think he got worried that his neighbors would hear him because the window's open.
Yes. Yeah, particularly the ones to that side of the house that there's a guy mowing, you know, the guy who mows his lawn, what, at 11 o'clock at night, probably?
No, sprinklers do go on every night at 11, I hear them.
Well, be careful that your door's not open. There's a fire in there and start short-circuiting things in the man cave. But, all right. Sugar Tits nor Jim Duggan is in this match, thank God. Otherwise, Vince at the broadcast table would have had a field day. But it is our main event and the World Wrestling Federation Heavyweight Championship match. Your champion, The Undertaker, taking on the head of the Nation of Domination.
Oh, please, no, please.
And that is, of course, Farouk. At this point, were you almost like, yeah, Taker's in a title match, whatever.
I just want to put a bullet in my head at this point. This match, I was not a Farouk fan. I think I've made that pretty clear in these reviews. I just did not, you know, I don't hate many guys, but I don't know what it was with him. I don't know if his whole stupid shtick, like we've talked about, the whole please no thing, and he was just so fucking boring in the ring, and you knew he was never going to win this match. It was so anticlimactic. You knew he was not going to, you know, defeat The Undertaker at this point. And now we just sat through a pretty good match, and it's just like, oh, got to fucking get through this nonsense now.
You
knew he wasn't going to be good in the ring, and you also knew he wasn't going to win. So I was like, almost like, what's the point? The match is 14 minutes of just, you know, boredom.
Yeah, no, it was not very good. It's a shame because, we've talked about it the last few shows. It's not that Undertaker's title feud was lost. I don't think that was the thing. It's just, yeah, the roster was just not, you know, the tone of the company had changed, and we saw a lot of changes for the good, but the roster still wasn't quite there, which is funny because we both think that Raw some weeks was a better show than Nitro, yet Nitro easily, and it's okay to say this now, easily had the better roster.
Oh, yeah. They were loaded. WCW was loaded from, you know, late 96 when they started really tapping into Japan and Mexico and loading their roster up, or I'll say early 96, right through when they closed. I mean, their roster was always, always loaded to the point where they had more guys than they had room for. So, WWF very, very thin at this point. They don't really even get, you know, filled up until, like, early to mid 98 when they start, you know, really establishing a developmental territory and bringing a lot of guys up and in. So throughout 97, they're very, very light on talent. But you had some guys that were putting around Raw, like Furnace and LaFon. They were around, you know, they could have stuck them in here somewhere.
What the hell happened to them?
They were injured. You know, they were in that car accident with Sid.
Oh, that's right. That's
so
right.
That's why they were off TV. But still, even a guy like the Sultan, you could have stuck him in the tournament. I don't know. You know, there's other guys that were putting around that you could have used. Leaf Cassidy was still around, Rockabilly, Jesse James. I mean, there's guys you could have made into something. You know, Vader obviously was injured, so that's why he's not on this show. That was another blow to them as well. So,
yeah. No, and Taker, you know, still was, he was always, please, no, powerbomb, no. He was getting, you know, slowly getting there. His in-ring work was still very stellar, but tonight...
Yeah, not a guy you could... Yeah, this is not a guy who's, at this point, could carry Farouk to a watchable match. A little bit of change in the Nation. There'll be more change the night after this. We'll get to next week. But one minor change is PG-13 is now gone. They lost the match to Legion of Doom, and LOD just wrecked them in the ring, and the Nation left them for dead. So they are now gone, so we don't get the rapping anymore. So now we just get the familiar Nation of Domination beat with no lyrics.
Yeah, and... And I word this in our comments on the board, but and Taker, please forgive me, and please don't put me in any moves, but it almost felt like a 95 Diesel match here, just very slow and boring and just so unpleasant to watch. It's such a shame. Actually, the highlight of the match is when Ahmed comes in to save.
Yeah, at Taker. The end, yes. Well, Savio and Crush come out and they end up actually costing Farouk the match. So that led to the turmoil the next night. But Ahmed comes down to help the Undertaker. Undertaker actually gets pissed off at him for helping.
Yeah.
And starts yelling at him. And Ahmed actually hits a Pearl River Plunge to end the show.
Yeah.
And we thought at the time that that didn't even make TV. We thought it was just for like the fans of the crowd or something. So.
Right. I thought that was... I think that's the best Ahmed moment in about 9 months.
Yeah. Now, we actually have more to talk about. We kind of glossed over or didn't even mention. Before I get to that, though, Farouk, they actually had a decent little storyline going to this match where he was saying, you know, he played the race thing and said there's never been a black champion and all that stuff. So, I mean, that was kind of a compelling angle. This is not a compelling match. Paul Bearer was back on TV. We mentioned before he was not with Mankind, but he's back actually managing The Undertaker. He came back and began blackmailing Undertaker, saying he had a mysterious secret that he was going to tell the world if he did not allow Paul Bearer to manage him. So Taker caved and allowed Paul Bearer to become his manager once again because he did not want the secret revealed. And this secret would be a major storyline throughout the rest of the year. Ahmed has spent the weeks leading up to the show telling Taker to be a man and not listen to Paul Bearer. Don't let him blackmail, saying it's, you know, nothing is that bad. You can't let yourself be owned by another man, basically. So that's why he comes out here and basically, you know, bitches out Paul Bearer. And that's why Taker gets kind of pissed at him as well. So
Yeah, but yeah, and the storyline again will percolate and percolate. And you're thinking to yourself, oh, what crap could this possibly be? Yeah. The secret, God only knows.
Yes.
Maybe they'll bring Bertha Faye back and she's take her sister or something. I don't know. But
I do know someone who's very into the secret, that that whole theory about how you live your life based on if you believe it'll come true. She's a fucking wacko. So.
Yeah. But all right. So there you go. There's your main event. There's your ending. Again, it was the best.
You want to tell the final story?
Ahmed looked in a while. You must tell the final story.
Okay.
Yeah,
so,
please tell the final story.
We're very
Something's got to get us uplifted from whatever the hell we just had to talk about. So
we're very dejected. We head out of the arena. Wayland is sitting in his car. We sulk into the back seat. And Wayland, you know, always an upbeat guy, always a super nice guy, asks us in his classic way, what do we think of the bouts? He always calls them the bouts. And we said, yeah, I was okay. And he had actually watched the show because he was recording it for us at home. Because, of course, Jim had the box of special happiness. And he gets all excited, and he says, unbelievable news, guys. I couldn't believe it. I was watching the pay-per-view, and I have this information that's going to shock you. They told us what Mankind's real name was. And of course, Jim and I already knew. And, you know, we humored poor Waylon and said, oh, what was it, Waylon? What did they say the name was? And, of course, in his classic moment, Waylon says, his name, it was Monty. And Jim says, no, it's Mick, Dad, Mick. He goes, that's right, Mick. Mickey Walsh. Very entertaining if you knew the late, great Wayland Price at all. So, yes. Ending to a bizarre night as he took us home. And I don't remember if I spent the night there or my dad picked me up later after the show or something. But, yeah. I was looking forward to Raw. That's about it. And I did not grade this guy high as well at all. You know, I gave it a D in our review. And talking about it again, I don't think I'd ever go much higher. So, I think this kind of gets overlooked sometimes as one of the worst pay-per-views of all time. But it's definitely up there. I think it's up there with 95 in a way.
Yeah. By the way, did you know Mickey Walsh has a brother named Monty?
Yes, he does.
Yes, he runs a car service company.
Yes.
Why don't we?
The only thing that makes this better than 95 is the Steve Austin Shawn Michaels match.
Yeah.
If that match was not on the show, this would not be in good shape at all.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You've heard it from us. Now let us hear from you. Let us go now to, of course, our wonderful PTB Nation feedback on King of the Ring at 1997. I'll go first this time, Jim. Actually, you know what? You go first. I think I went first last time.
All right, Rav, our buddy Derek Cornett, will be joining us in a few moments here, actually. I think Triple H needs to bow down to Mick Foley for making his career what it was. Foley finds himself in a soon-to-be-normal spot by putting over Hunter's Helmsley. His rise to stardom was held off for a year for good reason, but there's a lot more to the show than him, which is a good thing. Six-man match with some nice teams and big names. You have got Austin and Michaels will be one of many super team champions facing off. I prefer the match a couple of months over this one. Then, of course, Undertaker in his run as champion against a formidable Farouk. I think more could have been done with the leader of the nation, make him more of a threat. But either way, it's a fun card and a good main event. I'm ready for Stampede.
Okay. Corey Ferreira. Helmsley versus Ahmed. All right. Who the hell let Ahmed be in a King of the Ring tournament? Well, luckily, Helmsley beats him here, and thankfully they did not give him a lot of time because it would have been a lot worse than this was. Mankind versus Lawler. Seems rather odd seeing Lawler in the King of the Ring, but he puts Mankind over in the sets of a Mankind versus Helmsley final later on in the night. Goldust versus Crush. Well, here's our monthly 1997 random mid-card match. This match is awful, and well, that's all that needs to be said about it. Heart Foundation versus LOD and Sid. Hey, Sid's back, but this is his last pay-per-view appearance, so no need to mark out for it. Nice way to carry on the Heart Foundation story here. Heels get the win to carry their momentum. Helmsley versus Mankind. This is a really great final to the King of the Ring. These two just beat the piss out of each other for 20 minutes. Finally, after a year of waiting, Mr. Helmsley takes his first step into becoming what he would become. Michaels versus Austin, carrying on with the good work rate. After the King of the Ring final, we get this classic forgotten gem. 1997, Shawn Michaels and Steve Austin given 20 minutes on pay-per-view is just pure gold. Sadly, this match never gets talked about as a great match because it really is a great match. They go to a double DQ, so I assume Michaels didn't want a job or they didn't want to beat Austin. Taker versus Farouk. Okay, this is just really random. Had Farouk done anything worthwhile to get a shot at the title, and beating Ahmed does not garner a title shot. Well, after two great matches, this one is not so great. Taker retains his title in a meh match. Overall, rather poor King of the Ring, and only worth it for the final and the Austin versus Michaels match. And quickly, Meltzer's totals, 1 star, 1 3/4, 1 3/4, 3.5 for Helmsley Mankind. Wow. 4 for Michaels Austin and 2.25 for Taker and Farouk.
Yeah, so a decent rating. I mean, you know, the only difference between him and us is he actually gives the Mankind match a little higher, like you said. And actually, Taker Farouk he gives higher than I would have thought as well.
Yeah, interesting.
So Fazio to Fazio, wow, time to bow down to the king. That's right, it's the time of year we crown royalty. His name is Hunter S. Helmsley, the king of the ring. That's right, PIC's King of the Ring 97. This pay-per-view is off the charts, and having Hunter win, that was the best choice, and he needed it, and this could be an early start to Hunter Mankind for the rest of the pay-per-view. Pretty good. I loved Austin Shaw match. It was fucking amazing. 22 minutes of ass-kicking, the two most amazing moments were in this match. My dad enjoyed this one. Austin stunning Tim White and Sean super-kicking Mike Kyoto. Like, that was pretty awesome. The main event was solid. Take a Farouk. But Mo did Pearl River plunging Taker left me confused. Kind of like your comments.
What about the no snacks? What, Dad doesn't get snacks anymore?
No more. Yeah, maybe funds were tight in the Tafazio DeFazio household.
Yeah, it's highly possible. You know, maybe the health care in Canada was, well, I don't know, Brett talks about it somewhere down the line. So, one half of the power trip from down under, Michael McDonald. Not too impressed with the tournament this year. Quite frankly, only the 95 one is worse, although the right guy won. Also cemented Mankind as a face, so it served a dual purpose. Austin vs. Michaels is okay. Hell of a mess, though. Six-man tag is okay, and Farouk falls short of being the first black champion, which he already was. Rather forgettable event, to be quite honest. Next month is better, but this isn't the year for quality pay-per-view as a whole. And I don't know if Michael is asking that rhetorically or if he doesn't know or not, but yes, he was WCW champion in 1992.
Ed Harris, in general, it's a bad sign when the best match of pay-per-view ends in a double DQ. With that being said, Austin Michaels' match is still pretty damn good. Damn shame the rest of the show isn't.
Jay Hinchey, finally getting to the really good stuff of 1997 as the summer kicks off with King of the Ring in Providence, Rhode Island. Not the best overall King of the Ring, but I still think it's solid overall. Helmsley versus Ahmed, decent opener here, and Ahmed was still pretty over as he gets a good pop coming out. Interesting that Hunter was eliminated in the qualifying round, but was put back in after Vader's injury, I believe. Helmsley gets the win to advance to the finals. Mankind versus Lawler, I actually enjoyed this match, and Mankind's pre-match promo is funny when he quotes Lion King, saying, "I just can't wait to be king." Mankind wins via Mandible Claw to advance to the finals, meeting Helmsley. Goldust versus Crush, really forget why these two men met here, but Goldust wins and not much help from the Nation for Crush. Heart Foundation versus LOD Sid, six-man tag team match as USA versus Canada continues, and this will be the last hurrah for Sid and the company. Hearts get the win in a pretty long but decent match. Helmsley versus Mankind, King of the Ring Finals, and what a match this was. Both guys just beat the crap out of each other for almost 20 minutes. Spot of the match is the pedigree on Foley through the announce table, and even China breaks the scepter over Mick's back. Helmsley hits a second pedigree to become King of the Ring and begins his ascent to main event status. Austin versus Michaels. For the first time, the WWF Tag Team Champions meet one-on-one, and this, too, is a hidden gem. These two go back and forth like the previous bout for 20 minutes as well. We see a couple of referees get taken out with a stunner and sweet chin music before the match is thrown out. Both Austin and HBK leap together in a cool moment after beating the hell out of each other. Undertaker versus Farouk. Main event for the WWF title is Farouk wants to be the first black champion in WWE history. Match is not bad, and we see more problems with the Nation. Taker retains with the tombstone, no baby please, to continue his run. After Paul Bearer makes Undertaker chokeslam Farouk through a couple more times, and Ahmed Johnson runs into Pearl River Plunge, the dead man. Also forgot to mention the classic badge stakes bit with Austin putting Brian Pillman's head in the toilet, and Bret Hart making the challenge to any five American wrestlers for the following pay-per-view. Overall, not a bad King of the Ring, and I think I hear a stampede coming.
Dennis Nunez, Seuss Fest 97. The first pay-per-view in my new house, and it's this just a piss-poor card from start to finish. The only saving grace is the Shawn versus Austin match, which is a good solid encounter. Both guys had pretty good chemistry with each other and worked a decent fight. Both guys staring at each other as they leave was a nice touch as well. Also, Austin's flushing of Brian Pillman's head down the John was a hilarious moment. Scott's beloved versus Mankind's okay too, but nothing special. The rest of the show's great if you need help sleeping at night. Very forgettable, but soon things will be very good. Oh, Canada.
And now, everyone move out of the way, because he likes the stage all to himself. For it is time to hear from
King James Mander.
Yes, the king has arrived. I decided to revisit this pay-per-view before giving any feedback, and these are my thoughts, in no particular order. My order, and you will deal with it. Oh, fuck, have I been dreading this event? This is seriously bad. As soon as a three count is completed, Ahmed Johnson is immediately chasing after Helmsley. Why the fuck is Jerry Lawler in this tournament? And why does it take Mankind over 10 minutes to beat him? Crush versus Goldust? What the fuck were they thinking when they put this match together? Owen managed to fuck up the finish in the six-man tag. You'll be hard-pushed to find a pay-per-view where you don't like a single match, but this is just terrible. Why were all the matches so long?
Why?
Why? It just feels like the longest show ever. Don't like Helmsley? So don't care about him winning the King of the Ring or him being Mankind with a toy crown after the match. Not like my crown, dammit!
I'm the real king.
Very strange match between Shawn Michaels and Stone Cold. I wish we could have seen the rematch between Bret and Shawn here. Love the sound of the stipulation where the Heart Foundation are handcuffed to each ring post, and Bret has to beat Shawn in under 10 minutes. I don't remember the ring post thing. That's kind of cool. Brian Pillman shining a lamp in Vince's face for a reason is probably the best part of the show. This is a really bad pay-per-view to watch when you have a terrible hangover. Drinking all of my mead! Whoever came up with this card must have been absolutely mental. Undertaker versus Farouk. Just the thought of this match makes me feel sick. It is
Send
so
Send him to
boring.
The gallows.
Can we please move on to Canadian Stampede? Hell, give me King of the Ring 95 over this shit. And that, from me, King James Mando.
I come from the lineage of King Ralph. All right, Wade Ferrari. Bad show with Austin Michaels being the only good match. I like Hunter Selmsey winning the whole tournament. I liked Hunter Selmsey winning, but the whole tournament was pretty bad and booked very half-assed with only 8 guys involved in that dumb storyline with Helmsley getting a second chance to qualify because he threatened to sue because he didn't know he could be disqualified. 1997 has been a pretty disappointing year so far as pay-per-views go. Fortunately, that changes in a big way next month.
Along with Jay Hinchey, of course, fellow PTB Nation Tournament semifinalist Dave Hall, the other half of the power trip from Down Under. After some solid promising cards, I'm not sure what to say about this card. Most of the event felt very slow and plodding. Hunter struggles to carry Moadib, who shows he is now totally a waste of space. The now nearly face Mankind is made to work a horrid match with Jerry Lawler, which is mostly Lawler stalling and cheating before Mankind puts him away. We are then forced to watch the unimpressive Goldust wrestle the unwatchable Crush in an absolute stinker. So far, this is terrible. The Heart Foundation wrestle LOD and Sid, not much to say. Okay, but nothing spectacular. Then Helmsley and Mankind nearly put us all to sleep with a very slow final match. Thankfully, they bring a little life back when Helmsley and China do a post-match beatdown and solidify Mankind's face turn. Then we get some real life when the whole Heart Foundation comes out and lay the challenge for next month. It's a real shame when an interview is close to the best part of the whole night. Now comes the highlight of the night as Austin and HBK put on a solid and entertaining match. Shame it wasn't the main event as Undertaker is forced to try and carry Farouk. This is a waste of space with only Paul Bearer's antics adding any interest to the match. And then we get the save by Moadib. Undertaker is going to move from one slow, struggling, unintelligible challenger to a worse one. Or does he? Apart from the Heart Foundation interview and Austin vs. HBK, I really do not care for this King of the Ring.
Austin Pfeff.
Mr. Pfeff.
Don't have too much to say about this event, so I'll be brief. Hunter becomes King of the Ring in a good final against Mankind. Scott now becomes his prince to the throne. Austin Michaels I didn't enjoy too much. To me, seems slow and think these two could do better together. Maybe I need to rewatch this match again. A highlight was when Sean was going to help that kid who got over the rail, and Austin comes out after Sean basically says, fuck the kid, fight me. Taker Farouk had to be had ways to be good knowing Farouk's background, but nothing clicked. Average King of the Ring at best, but 95 is still the worst.
And finally, Sean Zern.
Mr. Zern.
I didn't really remember this card, so I wasn't sure what to expect. The opening match between Helmsley and Ahmed was okay, but I was surprised Hunter won at the time. Ahmed had lost steam, but I wasn't a fan of Hunter at this time, and to me it seemed like he got most of his heat from China anyways. Goldust vs. Crush was random, and boy was it fucking boring. I could never really get into this Crush character, and always thought he was boring in the ring during this time period. Goldust would be onto better things next month. I actually liked the six-man tag. Sid was still incredibly over, and I was surprised he was going after this. I thought LOD looked pretty good in this match, but this seemed more like a showcase for the Heart Foundation, and I thought they did pretty well. Owen and Bulldog were always great as a team, and I'm sure they wanted to establish Neidhart again. Helmsley vs. Mankind. Wow, can you say slow? This match did not need 20 minutes. They beat the crap out of each other, but it was slow and plodding. The pedigree on the announce table was a great spot, and it really showed how tough Mankind was, and I think they did a good job getting people to cheer Mankind, but the match itself was not good. Michaels Austin was a pretty good match. They kept a fast pace, and the crowd actually cared about this match. This was the real main event of the show, but the ending sucked. I know they didn't want either man to lose, but they could have had a better ending, like the Foundation interfering. Either way, match of the night. Undertaker vs. Farouk was also another bad match. The two styles just didn't mesh well together. I never saw Farouk as a main eventer anyways, so I didn't think there was much about doubt that Taker was going to win. I was still interested in the Bearer-Taker secret, and throwing Ahmed into the mix was an interesting twist. Overall, this was a flat show, and it was really hard to get into. Besides the match with Austin and Michaels and the Heart Foundation stuff, everything else was boring or bad. The King of the Ring finals match went way too long, but did a good job establishing Mankind as a face. I can't really recommend this show.
All right, there you have it. There is our review of the trash bag known as King of the Ring 1997. Hope you enjoyed our little personal slant I added tonight. And, of course, Scott forging on as the warrior he is, as always. So what we're going to do now, Scotty, is take a quick break.
Yes.
And when we return, we're going to have our week one NFL picks. Very excited to get through those. We have week one. Of course, the first game is coming up Wednesday night, Giants and Cowboys.
Yes.
And so we'll go through those, and after that we will have match number, what are we on, four? Four of the quarterfinals to determine who will advance to the semifinals. So, and that is, of course, Jeremy Nichols and Derek Cornett. So stay tuned, PTB Nation. We'll be right back with our NFL Week 1 picks.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following. How many pro wrestling news websites do you visit to get your daily news? 3, 4, maybe 5? Do yourself a favor and make that number 1. WrestleChat.net, the only professional wrestling news site that brings you all wrestling news all day long, and is home of the critically acclaimed Still Real to Us podcast, starring former CZW, ROH, and ECW announcer Eric Gargiulo and the champ Jeff Peck. That's WrestleChat.net. WrestleChat, it's where it's at.
Yes, WrestleChat.net, indeed, your home for everything pro wrestling. All the news and notes you need from WWE, TNA, Ring of Honor. They have a great message board. Check out their podcast, the champ Jeff Peck and his announcer. And of course, while you're perusing the site, you look to the right, you see the PTB Gnome, proudly worn by Jordan Duncan. Click on it, and you'll go to our full archive, courtesy of our good friends at Podbean. That is WrestleChat.net, indeed where it's at. Also, don't forget the history of WWE.com, our friend Grant Cawthon. Outstanding research site, ring results, DVD reviews, everything you need is there. Also, check out our show on Stitcher.com, whether you have iPhone, Android, any kind of phone or any kind of player, tablet. Go to it, you can listen to our shows anytime. And then, of course, also on iTunes. And, of course, check out our message board, Bigelow34.proboards.com. We're always talking wrestling, sports, anything you want. Check out JR's and my reviews. We talk Raw, SmackDown, all sorts of stuff. And don't forget to help out our friend Jay Womet. Still dealing with a lot of physical issues with his leg and a touch of skin cancer, but he's a fighter, and he's a great fan of the show. And if you want to help him, check the link on our board, Bigelow34.proboards.com, and you can help him out. He's a great guy.
Hello, everybody. This is Bruno Lauer, a.k.a. Harvey Whippleman, a.k.a. Downtown Bruno. I'm on the Place to Be. You're listening to the Place to Be podcast. And I'm going to tell you something right now. If you know about our business, our industry, the WWE, our sport, this is the Place to Be. The Place to Be podcast. You know why? Because it's like Mama said, it be that way sometimes.
All right, PTB Nation, welcome back. Hope you enjoyed King of the Ring 97. Okay, well, good. I didn't live, and it was a little bit better this time around, though.
I did because of all the, you know, Helmsley greatness. But
oh, of course, yes. Enough. So anyway, we go from one of your loves and betroths to another one here tonight.
Yes.
And I think we heard enough of that from you and Kyle Forshetti last week. If you haven't yet listened to our NFL 2012 season preview, please go back. Kyle was awesome, as always.
Yes,
and we had a lot of fun breaking down the season. So with that said, it is time to what, Scott?
Take the field.
And why is that?
Because
it's week one of the NFL season, and we're going to do our predictions.
Yep. I'm about to say, I'm waiting for it. I'm waiting for it.
And as we do this right now, Lou Holtz is on my screen, so should I do the first couple in his voice?
The Giants and the Cowboys.
I think that Tony Romo's going to do a great job this year.
He's pretty awesome. He's pretty awesome. All right.
That's like Ken Shamrock and Lou Holtz's son that you just did the voice of.
All right. Last year, of course, our first season of NFL predictions, mm-hmm. my PIC did beat me by 3 games.
Wampa.
So this year I will try to get even.
Unlikely.
We begin, of course, with the Wednesday
what?
Night game, not the Thursday night game. Yep, Wednesday night game.
Your boy Obama screwed everything up.
Oh, yeah. Of course, it's all his fault. It is all his fault, but anyway. We go to the Snoopy Bowl, though. MetLife Stadium. We'll be there twice this weekend, JR.
Mm.
MetLife Stadium in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Of course, home of WrestleMania 29. It is also the home of the defending world champion New York Football Giants, and they, of course, open the season, as the custom is now in the NFL, the first game of the season, under the lights, hosted by the defending world champion. The Giants will, of course, take on the Dallas Cowboys. I am, of course, picking the Cowboys, but objectively now, this is a game they have to win. We've talked about it. We talked about it last week with Kyle. This is a must. There aren't many week one must wins, but you talked about your team as well. We'll get to them in a little bit. This is a must-win for the Cowboys. They need to get off to a really good start. They need to show that the Giants are not going to bully them, because I feel like they have. The Giants have bullied the Cowboys the last couple of years, and the Cowboys need to push back. And I think it's going to be a good game. I don't think Romo's going to make any mistakes. It's going to come down to the defense, not blowing, you know, not giving up big passes. And they've got to put pressure on Eli. Enough of Eli getting 20 seconds to throw the ball. It can't happen anymore. They got to go in there and they got to hit him. I hope this front seven can do that, but we'll see what happens. Obviously, I'm picking the Cowboys, but I am a little skeptical based on this first game of Rob Ryan's new defense.
You done?
Yes.
Okay. All right. As I mentioned last week, not a big fan of the Giants this year. I really thought they, you know, got hot last year. I think they're a good team. I think they're a very good team. I just don't think they're going to run away with this division, as I've heard some people state. So I do like them here, though. I think Dallas is going to have a tough time going into that stadium. The fans are going to be out of their minds, fired up for this game. If this was in Dallas, I'd be feeling a little bit differently. But going into the Snoopy Bowl, you know, heated rivalry coming off a championship season, I think it's going to be really hard for Dallas to go in there. I think Romo will play well. We'll see, though. Witten's definitely going to be out now, it sounds like, so it's a pretty big blow. The Giants seem to be at full strength pretty much on offense, so I think the Giants win. I'm not going to say it's a blowout, but I think they win comfortably at the end. I think it'll be close for a bit, and then they'll win by like 10 or 13 or something like that. So I'm going to take the Giants here.
Okay. All right, that's your one Wednesday game. Let's move on to Sunday. We'll begin at Soldier Field in Chicago, where if you listen to our show, it almost feels like JR's Super Bowl pick.
Yeah.
The Chicago Bears.
I love me some Bears.
Will be the first opponent of the Andrew Luck era as the Indianapolis Colts come to Soldier Field. If this was like week 9, I think maybe Andrew Luck will throw the ball around and he'll give the Bears a game. It's not going to happen. Week 1, he's going to be cold. It's, you know, first game. And
well, according to you, he'll definitely be cold, because I think it's like 20 degrees anywhere that's not a dome all year long, man. According to your
weather.
No,
it's only wherever Peyton Manning plays.
Okay.
No, cold, I mean, you know,
I know.
First start and everything. The Bears should – I think the Bears are going to win this game handily.
Yeah, I think the Colts are going to be friskier towards the end of the year once Luck really gets going and things kind of get settled in. But this is not a very good or easy first assignment for him to go into Chicago against a pretty stacked Bears team. So the Bears are healthy. I think they're going to want to establish Forte out of the gate. I think they want to establish Cutler to Marshall as well. So I think we'll see a lot of that. That defense will be fired up. So I think they win. They win pretty handily here.
Yes, I agree. I like the Bears too. All right, move on to Cleveland Browns Stadium in Cleveland, where the Browns and the Trent Richardson era. There'll be a lot of rookie era starting.
Is he even playing Richardson? I know he was hurt.
I'm not sure. He probably will probably miss his first game. But they host the Philadelphia Eagles, your NFC East pick. I think this game will be close early, but I think the Eagles will pull away late, and turnovers will hurt the Browns. I like Philadelphia.
I've seen a couple people throw this out there as a possible upset pick, but I don't know. Cleveland's got probably Richardson's out. I don't think we know Joe Hayden's out from the PED suspension. So, Brandon Whedon's first game against Philly's defense, which, you know, should hopefully be better than last year. It's pretty much the same core coming back, minus Asante Samuel. But they are still pretty loaded, and they're putting Nnamdi Asamoah back to the outside where he belongs instead of playing inside. So, this is going to be a tough, tough game. If it was in Philly, I'd say it would be a complete rout. As it is, I still think they'll win by a couple touchdowns. Unless Vic gets hurt early, I think Philly kind of runs away with this one.
Okay. Next up, we go to LP Field in Nashville, where the Tennessee Titans will host the New England Patriots. I like the Pats in this game. Chris Johnson coming back, trying to rebound from a tough season last year. The Pats, obviously, the favorites in the East. It'll be a close game early, but I think the Pats pull away and win.
If I'm Tennessee, I just feed the rock and try and eat the clock up. That's what I would do, is keep feeding it to Ringer, keep feeding it to Chris Johnson, and try to wear down the New England defense and then, you know, keep things close. That's their only chance. If they try and get to a shootout with New England, it's not going to end well. I still think the Pats win here, but if I'm looking for a key for a way of Tennessee to stay in this game, it is not having Jake Locker throw 50 times. So I think they really need to try and control the field, control the clock, and maybe they can at least give them a game. But the Pats are pretty loaded on offense, so I don't see this one being too much of a contest for New England.
All right, next up, Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, where the Chiefs will host a Super Bowl favorite, not this year for you and I anyway, the Atlanta Falcons. I think the Falcons need to get off to a good start. They need to come out focused. I don't see this game being very close. Sorry, Kyle Forchetti. I think the Falcons went big.
Yeah, me too. I'm not really buying into the Chiefs hype that Kyle was spewing last week. they may be okay. They always play well at home, rather. But, Romeo Crennel, I don't know. And I'm not a big Matt Castle fan, like I've said before. I love Jamal Charles back and Eric Berry and these other guys. But, Kyle mentioned that they were getting all these guys back, but what he didn't mention is they're all coming back from ACL surgeries, and that's not something you just come back from and play at 100% immediately. So, you know, we've seen a lot of guys take some time to get going again. So we may not see a lot of Jamaal Charles. We may see a lot more Peyton Hillis, possibly. We'll see how Dwayne Bowe is. He sat out a lot of the offseason workouts and training camp as well. So, yeah, I like Atlanta here. They're going to come out and chuck the rock around and try and get Julio Jones and Roddy White involved early.
Yeah.
And then ice next it week- with Turner.
Yes. I don't think the Falcons have a problem here. Two rebuilding teams will meet at Mall of America Field in Minneapolis, where the Vikings will host the Jacksonville Jaguars. The lesser of two evils here. I like Minnesota. I was a big Christian Ponder fan last year. I don't think he's a bad quarterback. Adrian Peterson's back. I think you'll see a lot of Toby Gerhart. I think they'll ease Peterson in slowly.
Yeah. There's no point in waiting, running him out there 100 times, especially in this game.
No, not at all. But I think the Vikings win.
Yeah, me too. I like Minnesota. I like Minnesota as a first game. Their schedule's not easy, and they're in a tough division, but I like them to be in games. You know, they were bad at the second half of last year. Once Ponder really got his feet under him, he played pretty well. So, Percy Harvin's a monster. So I think they'll be Jacksonville. I think Jacksonville, even, with the reports that Gabbert is improved and looked pretty good in the preseason, I don't see them really having much to cheer about this year. So I'll take Minnesota here.
Okay, next up to the Mercedes-Benz Superdome, home of the Super Bowl. Will this team be in it? A lot of people thought so, including myself, but probably not. And that's, of course, the host team, the Saints. And they open with the Washington Redskins as the Robert Griffin era begins.
Mm-hmm.
And just like Andrew Luck, he's got a buzzsaw. I think the Saints will win this game. They're going to come out. They're going to come out to prove something. And they're going to come out angry. And Drew Brees is going to throw for a boatload of yards against a very suspect Redskin defense. I think the Saints win this game big.
I wanted to take this as my upset pick, but I just couldn't do it. New Orleans, I picked them to go to the playoffs, so this is a game they need to win to make that happen. I can't see them blowing this at home against Washington. Robert Griffin, I think, is going to come out to try and impress early, but it'll take them a few weeks to really get going with Washington. But I do think they're going to be a tough out this year, but New Orleans picks up the win here.
All right, next up, guess what? It's back to the Snoopy Bowl for...
He's still around. He's back.
That's right.
After a few week absence at the end of last year.
Yep. Big Tony makes his return. Tony Sperano. And, of course, the JETS Jets open the season at home against the Buffalo Bills. You and I
big game. Big game.
Yeah, huge game. You and I both kind of went evens, kind of went different directions. You have the Jets as the wild card. I have the Bills. But I think the Jets are going to win this game. I do. I think you guys are going to come out determined. I think Buffalo might struggle a little bit. I think Fitzpatrick might throw a couple of errant picks. I'm going to take you guys at home. But if this does not go well, obviously the Daily News and the Post the next day will be full of what-ifs. But I'm going to give you guys the edge in this one.
This is a really big game, man. It's weird to say that week one, but kind of like Baltimore-Pittsburgh last year, this kind of sets the tone for the pecking order in this division. And they don't play again until week 17, so they're not going to see each other for a while. The Jets talk in camp. And over the last preseason weeks here has been that they're saving a lot of their offense for Buffalo. They've been very bland in the preseason, and it led to the whole, touchdown drought that ended last night that we heard ad nauseum about. So, they said that they're saving a lot of their Wildcat and special Tebow packages for this game. They'll have all the receivers for only the second time. They only had them once in the preseason. Holmes is going to play. Jeremy Curley is going to play. Keller should be back. Hopefully Chaz Schillens plays as well, and Stephen Hill. So we'll see what they break out. The defense is going to come to play. But even last year, the one receiver that kind of gave Revis a little trouble was Stevie Johnson. So if he's got his shit together and his act together, he can give Revis some trouble. And Fitzpatrick, played well early in the year last year before he got hurt. So we'll see. Buffalo's defense is obviously much improved. And Austin Howard, who's replacing Wayne Hunter, really is going to have his work cut out for him defending Mario Williams and the rest of that pass rush. So, if the Jets' offensive line, to me, is the key in this game, if they can, keep that Buffalo... pass rush out of the backfield, and I think Sanchez will have the time and they'll get the run and pass game going. But it's gonna be if it's low scoring, the Jets win. If it gets high scoring, I think Buffalo wins. But I'll take the Jets here. I think they win something like maybe 21-14 or 21-17 or something like that.
Okay. Next up to Ford Field in Detroit, where Kyle Forchetti's Super Bowl pick, the Detroit Lions, begin their season with the St. Louis Rams. I think Detroit needs to get off to a really strong start. I think they will. Rams defense kind of brand new, some new pieces. But Detroit is going to look to prove something this year, so I like the Lions big in week one.
That's another one I really wanted to take as my upset pick.
Really? Really?
If it was in St. Louis, I think I may have done it. And this, you know, there's always that one game that's kind of like, oh, well, you know, it's like out of nowhere it comes week one. And to me, this kind of has the blueprint all over. Detroit's kind of that sexy team that everyone's leaning on. And, you know, guys like Kyle think they're going to go far and have a great year. And a team like St. Louis that was left for dead last year is back healthy and you know, has a little more punch. They got a new coach, a new defense, new offensive coordinator, a new system. So, you know, a little bit. I'm sorry, not a new coach. Spagnuolo's still there, right?
No,
he's gone, right? He's in New Orleans.
Yeah, he's in New Orleans, yeah. Okay. That's Jeff Fisher.
That's right, Jeff Fisher's there. Yeah, so a whole new regime. So, a lot going on there. And, it, you know, if it was in St. Louis, I would have maybe looked for the upset. But I don't see them going into Detroit winning that. But I think they give him a game. I think it's more of a game than you would expect. So, but I take Detroit there.
Okay. Next up, we go to Reliant Stadium in Houston, where my Super Bowl pick.
Mm-hmm. And me.
And your AFC. Well, your AFC champion pick. But both of us, all three of us actually haven't gone to the Super Bowl. The Houston Texans begin their quest hosting the Miami Dolphins. And I think Miami's, you know, Miami's definitely improved. But, again, another team that needs to kind of get last season out of their system. And I think they'll do that. I like Schaub's been chomping at the bit to get back on the field. Arian Foster's a beast. Andre Johnson, another guy who was bit with the injury bug last year. These guys are all going to be hungry right now. So I like the Texans pick.
Yeah, me too. Miami, you know, they're a mess down there. They traded away another lineman. They had already traded away Vontae Davis, and they got Ryan Tannehill starting, and I think they know it's a complete rebuild down there. So, and maybe they can be a little frisky early just because their defense is pretty good. But I think Arian, this is, like you said, Shaw wants to get back going, but I think this is Arian Foster's game. They're just going to pound, and then maybe try and get it into Andre Johnson late to put things away. But I think Houston, yeah, definitely wins this easily.
Okay. Next up, Lambeau Field in Green Bay, where the Packers.
By the way, is Yahoo right? They have New England as an underdog here.
Wow, really?
Yeah, that can't be right, can it?
That can't be right. That's weird. The Packers host the San Francisco 49ers, and this is my upset special. I am taking the Niners on the road.
Oh, wow.
I think the defense is going to hit hard. The Packers have, you know, they might just. I think they still have a hang. I think they're gonna. You're still going to feel the hangover from the loss of the Giants.
Yeah.
I think the Niners defense is hot. I think guys like Moss are going to want to prove themselves in a big stage like Lambeau. So my upset special, I like the Niners on the road in Green Bay.
I can't see them going into Green Bay and winning that game. I think Green Bay has something to prove after the way their season ended. I think Rodgers, he's not a guy that gets rattled when a team like the Niners hits him. So, you know, if this was like Michael Vick or, you know, Matt Ryan, you know, whoever, Flacco, someone who if they get hit, they get rattled. I just don't see it with Aaron Rodgers. So I think he'll be lighting it up. And, you know, the Niners, for all their defensive bravado, they can be thrown on. You can't run on them, but you can throw on them. So the team like Green Bay kind of has their number a little bit. And, you know, we saw the Saints game in the playoffs last year. The Saints scored a lot and they threw on them. You know, the Niners won that game because they were able to get their offense going. I don't know if they could do that right out of the gate here. They're going to have to, I think. They're going to have to. I think Green Bay is going to turn this into a shootout and end up winning this game.
Okay.
So I'm not allowed to take New England as my upset, right? Because even though Yahoo has them, because it's usually what I go by.
Yeah, but, I mean,
All right.
What kind of idiots are they?
They have Atlanta as the underdog, too.
What? Are you sure?
Well, these early things, I don't know.
Yeah, I guess so. Maybe they're taking the home team because it's hard to tell. I don't know.
I guess.
This is a tough one, at least to who the underdog and the favorite is. But we go to University of Phoenix Stadium in Glendale. Big NFC West battle here. The Arizona Cardinals host the Seattle Seahawks, and I think they're going to start fresh right out of the gate. I like the Seahawks in this one. I love Russell Wilson. I don't like the Cardinals secondary. I think he's going to dink and duck them and get big chunks of yardage.
Now, is Marshawn Lynch? He's out, right?
Yes, he is out.
Okay,
but I think Arizona's defense is very easy to pass on.
Yeah, Arizona's
Russell
terrible.
Wilson's got a lot to prove. There's a lot of proving in this week one after what happened last season. But I don't know if this is really an upset, but I'm going to take the Seahawks on the road.
Well, according to Yahoo, it is, so this is going to be my upset special. Okay. Seattle going on the road to Arizona. I think Arizona's going to be one of the worst teams in the league. I think they're terrible. They don't know what the hell they're doing at quarterback. We'll see if they actually use Ryan Williams or if he gets hurt again this year. But I think he'll be pretty good. But, you know, they get a lot. You know, they're in a lot of a mess down there, if that makes sense.
Yes.
But I think Seattle goes in there and gets a good win. And that's a big win for them because you expect them to win a lot of these games at home. And I'm reading actually right now the Cardinals have officially named John Skelton as the starter against Seattle. Yeah. So even more reason in my mind to go with Seattle here. I think the Seattle D is going to have a big week.
Yeah, and by week three, it'll be Kevin Cobb.
Big names cut today, by the way. Deion Branch, Shanika Wallace, Josh McCown, Tim Hightower, Greg Jones from the Giants, and my boy Vernon Golston got the axe from the Rams.
Yes.
Might be it for him.
Yeah. There's a lot of a few guys that other teams could pick up that could use.
I'd like to see the Jets bring Branch in. They need a veteran receiver, and you know, he's got the little Patriots intel as well. So
I'd like to see the Cowboys get Hightower. I like another running back guy that could block. Mm-hmm. Might be a good addition for them. All right. Next we go to Raymond James Stadium in Tampa, where the Buccaneers will host the Carolina Panthers in year two of Cam Newton. This is a tough one. I'm not crazy about either defense, but I'm going to give the edge experience-wise to Josh Freeman. So I'm going to take the Bucs at home. I think they'll run the ball with LeGarrette Blount. And I just lost. Who's the other running back? Totally.
Doug Martin.
Martin, yeah. I think they're going to be I think Shiano's going to open with that kind of Rutgers grinding offense. I think they're going to wear Carolina down. Newton will play okay, but I think the Bucs win.
Yeah, I like Tampa this year. I talked about them a lot in our preview last week. I really think they're going to have a good year. I think they're going to bounce back. They got a new coach, new system. And I know Kyle wasn't high on Greg Schiano, but I think anything's upgraded for Raheem Morris. So what do they have, 5 wins last year?
Yes.
Or 4 wins with Morris? So I think just that upgrade alone should get them a couple more wins, and then plus the increase in talent. You know, I see them at 8 or 9 wins, so I really think they beat Carolina here and kind of get the ball rolling a little bit.
Okay. Our primetime game on NBC from Sports Authority Field at Mile High, Pittsburgh Steelers and the Denver Broncos in a rematch from one of the most improbable finishes to a playoff game last year, but the guy who caused that is not here. The Peyton Manning era begins in Denver. I want to pick the Steelers, but I can't see Peyton losing his first game.
I can't.
A lot of people like him in the division, including you. I can't see him losing this game. It's going to be close. It'll come down to the end. I think Bronco fans might see a little Peyton magic at the end. So I think it's going to be a close game till the end, and I like the Broncos to eke it out late.
I have this weird thing with the Steelers. I feel like I have to pick them until like I said, they're like the John Cena. I think I have to keep picking them until they prove me wrong. So I'm going to take Pittsburgh here. You got to cut the champion if you want to be the champion. So let's see Denver do it with this whole new look. I mean, it's pretty much a whole new offense there. You know, thanks to Manning, and we'll see how he gets along right away with Eric Decker and Demaryius Thomas and that defense. Yeah. And you know, the O line is a mess though. So that, you know, if Von Miller and that defensive front can get to Roethlisberger early, they may have a chance. But don't forget, Ben is pretty good when he's healthy, and he's going to be healthy coming into the season. They got Mike Wallace back and Antonio Brown, and they'll be throwing it around. So I like Pitt to go in there on Sunday night. I'm looking forward to that game already. So Sunday night game.
Yeah.
I'm looking forward to all these games, but especially that one. That should be a good one. So I like Pitt here.
Okay. And, of course, week one, which means ESPN Monday night doubleheader.
Mm-hmm.
We will begin at M&T Bank Stadium in Baltimore, where the Ravens will host the Cincinnati Bengals. If this game was in Cincinnati, I might call the upset, but I don't think so. I think Flacco, who pretty much said he thinks he's an elite quarterback, well, on a primetime stage, my friend, this is a team you should shred.
Yes.
I'm going to take the Ravens at home.
Yeah, Baltimore's got to set the stage, and they're tough at home. And yeah, I heard, I was listening to Bill Simmons saying a couple other things, saying they think this may be the year we finally see Baltimore's defense start to crumble a little bit. But I don't know. They still got a lot of good players on that defense, even if some of them are aging. So I don't think Cincy's going to be as good as they were last year. I know that's another team Kyle was all in on. But I don't know. I think Zalton's going to have a tough second year. I think the teams are going to have kind of the script on him. And while he had a very good year for a rookie last year, he wasn't outstanding. I mean, you know, he had a lot of 180 to 220 yard games, two touchdowns and a pick or something like that, or one touchdown and one pick. And, that's not going to cut it if you really want to start leading this team. They kind of got by thanks to their schedule last year and because, a couple teams around them faltered late, like the Jets and Titans. So that's the reason they got in the playoffs. But I like Baltimore here at home. I think that's a tough game for Cincy to win week one.
Okay. And finally, the nightcap. I feel like I was talking to somebody this earlier today, JR, that it always seems like these two teams are always the second game of the week one doubleheader. Seems like it always is.
Well, they always pick a West team, so.
Well, yeah, but I feel like they never pick the Niners, or they never, I don't know. Anyway,
yeah, they did Niners-Cardinals one year, didn't they?
I think they did. I said that to somebody today. I think they did do the Niners once. Anyway, we go to Oakland Alameda County Coliseum to wrap up week one as the Raiders host the San Diego Chargers. Like you said, I put my chips in for the Raiders, so I gotta pick them to win week one at home. I think the defense is going to be amped up at home in prime time. I think I'm probably not the only one that thinks this team may win the West. So I think they're going to come out again, like we said, this whole piece, something to prove. And again, it's North Turner, and I have, I love the guy. One rings for me as an offensive coordinator. He's just not a good head coach. And I like the Raiders at home.
I like San Diego more than you and Kyle did, but I think Oakland wins this at home as well. And I think it'll be the usual Monday night, week one heartbreak for San Diego. Something stupid's going to happen. I'm thinking it's like 26-24 or something in the final, where San Diego's up late, they fumble, and Janikowski gets like a 50-yard field goal to win as the buzzer or something like that. So yeah. I think Oakland wins in kind of heartbreaking fashion. We didn't do our lock of the week, Scott. Mine's a Philly.
Yeah, I was about to say, we have our lock and our upset. Your lock is Philly. My lock is Houston. I think they're going to blow out the Dolphins.
And my upset is Seattle.
And my upset is San Francisco.
Scott, I didn't know if you wanted to do a little suicide thing between me and you this year. We each got to pick a team to win every week. And,
okay.
You know, you can only use them once, though.
Yep, of course. Absolutely. All right, well, we'll see.
But we're not going to end it if one of us gets it wrong. What we'll do is we'll just keep score, but you still can't use that team.
Right. No, okay. Right. Okay. All right. I think my suicide pick this week will be...
Remember, you can't use them again if you pick a team.
That's why I'm very judicious here. I'm going to take Tampa. Tampa. I want to save some of these big wigs till we get later on. So I like Tampa.
All right, because you went that way, meaning that's not a great lock. I'm going to take Minnesota. I don't love it. If you went with a more sure thing, I probably would have switched up and taken a more sure thing. But if you're rolling the dice a little bit, I'll roll it too. So, and this may be the only chance I have to take Minnesota. So,
I was thinking about the Vikings actually, but I might save them until they play someone like Arizona. So yeah. All right. So our suicide picks for Week One: I take the Bucks. You take the Vikes.
Yes.
And just to recap, your locks, our locks.
Right. Why don't you write all these down this year so we can keep track officially?
Yes. The locks too.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll do. All right. So we'll do standings for locks.
Yep.
Standing for upsets and the suicide.
Yes.
Okay. So for JR, your suicide is Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
Your lock is
Philly.
Philly. That's right. And your upset is Seattle. Okay, my lock is Houston, my upset is San Francisco, and my suicide is Tampa Bay.
All right, and as always, PTB Nation, these predictions are just for fun, not for gambling or any other purposes. Not intended to lead you that way. We're not trying to pretend we prognosticate at all. We're just having a good time doing some predictions for what we like to do for football. So nothing there monetarily involved and nothing, for gambling reasons.
Just
so
bragging rights.
Let's throw that out. Just bragging. All right, Scott, that brings an end to week one. We took the field. We got it done. It was a lot of fun. We're glad the predictions are back. It's always a good time. So with that said, you know what time it is now.
It is time. Three down, one to go. Who will join Jay Hinchey, Jason Greenhouse, and Dave Hall as the final participant in the semifinals of the PTB Nation Tournament?
And I am all zoinked because this is going to be a hell of a matchup.
Yes.
All right, PTB Nation, we are back, of course. Hope you enjoyed our King of the Ring 97 and NFL Week 1 pick so far. And we're here to cap off this cavalcade of fun with our final quarterfinal trivia matchup. Scott, why don't you set the stage?
Yes, of course. We are three quarters of the way to the semifinals. Our first semifinal is set. It will be Jason Greenhouse taking on Mr. Jay Hinchey. And in the second semifinal, it will be the most unlikely guy to not get a question wrong yet.
Yes.
Dave Hall, who is 8-for-8 in his questions.
But now, taking on... We have two guys tonight who have not gotten one wrong.
Yes.
Oh, I got one wrong.
Okay. No.
In any event, we have two outstanding participants. Our first, he is the Territory Warrior, and he actually participated in the first round matchup. He defeated Mr. Grunberg and Mr. Jay Wimette, and that is the Territory Warrior himself, Derek Hornett. Derek, welcome to the show.
Welcome. Thank you. It's been quite some time. I'm looking forward to getting back in here and hopefully moving on to the semis.
Yeah, it's been quite the layoff. Pretty crazy. First one and now last one of the second round. So
yes. All right. Your opponent is very happy right now. He is happy because if he listened to our NFL preview last week, he heard that Kyle Forchetti is now his best friend, because Kyle picked his beloved Detroit Lions to win the Super Bowl.
Oh.
Of course, we all know Kyle is on crack, and so is this guy. He is the Motor City Madman himself, Mr. Jeremy Nichols.
Jeremy's not from Detroit, though.
No, I'm from St. Louis.
I thought maybe he was just a Lions fan and you knew that. I'm like, wow, that's some real good research Scott did. And now I realize he did no research.
Jeremy, I actually went to college down by St. Louis. So it's a nice rivalry.
Oh, very nice. Very nice.
I just realized that I confused you with Mr. PTB Gnome himself, Jordan Duncan. Oh, okay. We don't like him anyway. No. So you know what, Jeremy, you're a Lions fan tonight. So just shut up and take it. How you doing?
I'm doing good, Scotty.
Good. All right. Now, instead of me wanting to start this over, which we're not going to do. All right, here we go. Final quarterfinal. Must be the Tylenol. Gentlemen, you know the rules.
Yeah.
First 1-3 wins. And as mentioned, unlike in the first round where the same person went last all the time, you guys will get to rotate. Each person will get an opportunity to answer second, thus being able, if they have enough points at that moment, to win the match. The winner of this match will take on Dave Hall in the semifinals. Now, the way I have it did it randomly, Mr. Cornette, you will go first. Mr. Nichols, you will go second, and then you guys rotate. In other words, each of you will be answering, starting with the second round, you'll each answer two questions in a row. And if you're lucky, you will get to answer last.
If you're lucky, we may start the tournament tonight, Scott. Can we go pick up the fucking pace?
And,
Jesus Christ.
And then we will... anyway, let's talk about the history of this. No. Jeremy, tell me about what it was like in St. Louis when you were... I'm just going to piss my my PSA off. Anyway.
You're only pissing off the people listening to the show. I don't care.
No, you can hang up on me then. Fine. Pick the questions. I don't have time for you. All right. Get the audio clips ready, will you? All right. Number one. Mr. Cornette.
Yeah.
You begin. Pick a number between 1 and 100.
1 and 100. We'll go with number 17.
Okay. When Ray Traylor was stripped of his boss gimmick by Nick Bockwinkel in WCW in 1994, he adopted a new persona that represented which vigilante association?
The Guardian Angels.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
That is correct.
That question was almost longer than your explanation and introduction to the tournament.
Well, that's true. Anyway, he got it right. Okay. Mr. Cornette, off to a good start. Mr. Nichols, you are next. Pick a number.
I will take number 29.
Okay. Who did Ric Flair defeat in a famous I Quit match at Clash of the Champions 9 in November 1989? You have 15 seconds.
Terry Funk.
That is correct. He defeated Funk at the Great American Bash earlier that year, and then in New York Knockout, that was the name of that Clash of the Champions, he defeated Terry Funk again. All right.
Can you give me an I'm sorry, Dennis, real quick, Scotty, while I'm here?
Oh, I'm sorry, Dennis. You egg-sucking dog, Ric Flair.
And Scott, can you please maintain our usual setup here?
I'm trying to sign into Messenger. That's why.
Yeah.
I'm trying.
Try a little harder.
I am trying. Fucking just play the audio. All right. We are
God
now in the
meeting. I get one wrong with Cornette. He'll be bashing me for weeks.
You're damn right it will.
Okay. It is now time for the mediums. You gentlemen get 20 questions. 20 seconds. Mr. Nichols, you are up now.
This it's goddamn, the end of a holiday weekend.
This goddamn Facebook thing is totally fucking me up here, okay? I can't take it. I'm trying to sign this goddamn thing and it's not working. God forbid that I get a question that JR doesn't know the answer to. Okay. All right.
I'll take number 50.
Which two loudmouth celebrities were embattled in a nasty feud in January 2007, leading to a Raw match between two impersonators? You have 20 seconds.
Donald Trump and Rosie O'Donnell.
Pretty good!
Yes, that is correct. It is indeed Rosie O'Donnell and Donald Trump. And that was, of course, one of the funnier moments in Raw in 2007. Okay, so Mr. Nichols, already with 2 points. You're almost on your way to making the semifinals. But Mr. Cornette will try and stop you. Derek, pick a number.
What are the numbers between?
1 and 112.
With a play 70. As well.
79.
Okay. Which Hart brother claims he was supposed to feud with Brett in 1994 before Brett decided Owen would be a better fit for the angle?
Bruce Hart.
And we do. Bruce Hart was indeed the one who he thought would be the better man. Okay. 2-2. Mr. Cornette, you can set yourself up now for victory if you get this one right. Pick another number.
Both number one.
Okay. Which New York Yankee superstar appeared alongside Mr. Perfect in a vignette in 1993 and also inducted the late wrestler into the WWE Hall of Fame in 2007? You have 20 seconds.
Oh, fudge.
Take your time. 15 seconds. It's longer than you think.
I have no clue. I just... Oh. Shit. I have no clue.
The answer is... JR?
The one and only, the great Wade Boggs.
Yeah. Okay. Not a Yankees fan that much, I guess. Sorry.
No problem. But... unfortunately, you open the door for Mr. Jeremy Nichols to win the match and advance to the semifinals to face Dave Hall. Mr. Nichols, pick a number between 1 and 112.
I'll take 100, sir.
Okay. For the win, which founding father of ECW was discovered to be a mole working for WCW and helping wrestlers jump from Philly to Hotlanta? You have 20 seconds.
Todd Gordon.
Damn it.
That's all I have ready. I'm sorry. Congratulations, Mr. Nichols. You have advanced over the hated heel, Derek Cornette.
Damn right.
Hey, if you're going to lose to someone, lose to me. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that'll be one less shit-talking that Cornette could do, so he's going to have to eat some humble pie finally. Mr. Cornette, thank you as always for joining us. So it was a good battle. You had a good run, even though it was like a month and a half apart between appearances. Thank you for joining us. Maybe next year, sir. Maybe next year.
Sounds good, boys.
All right. Keep up your good work on the Territory Wars.
Yes. Hey, go to our board, bigelow34.proboards.com. Check out the Territory Wars. This guy is awesome. The other participants are awesome. Definitely check it out. Derek, always a pleasure.
Thank you very much, John.
Great job, DC. I was happy to play against you, sir.
Absolutely.
Mr. Nichols, congratulations, sir. You have advanced. Still perfect in the tournament, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay, and you'll be facing
Don't you forget it either, JR.
That's what I want this time. You and Dave Hall, though, perfection, battling, hopefully in 2 weeks' time. Next week, we will have the big matchup between Jay Hinchy and Jason Greenhouse. So, Jeremy, I'm going to put you on the spot, Mean Gene style, King of the Ring 93. Who do you want to face in the finals?
You know, I said it at least 2-3 weeks ago. It's going to be me and Greenhouse in the finals.
Yep.
And I'm going to tell you right now, I know Greeny's listening. When it's me and him, his bald-headed ass belongs to me. That's what's going to happen at the end. I'm going to beat him, and that's going
to
be it.
Well, you know what, Jeremy, though? Jay Hinchy may have something to say, because he has not gotten wrong either, and he has made this competition look easy, whereas Greenhouse struggled last week, struggled big time.
Yes.
Jay Hinchy's going to be a fluke. I think that's what's going to happen.
Wow, okay. All right, Jeremy, calling Jay Hinchy out. We will see next Monday when those two clash. So, Jeremy, thanks for joining us as always. We'll talk to you in a couple weeks.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Thank you, Jeremy.
All right.
I got an idea. Why don't we edit the beginning again? Let me introduce Jeremy the correct way, and then you could just... No, never mind.
No.
Whatever, screw it. Who cares? All right. In any event, they'll fast forward anyway because a lot of us, some of our PDB Nation think I talk too much anyway, and that's their problem. All right. The semifinals are set.
Yeah, that's it.
Semifinals
four
are set.
Four left out of how many did we start with? 20-something?
24. 24 guys.
20 down, four to go.
Yes. And our semifinals are Jason Greenhouse versus Jay Hinchy and Dave Hall versus Jeremy Nichols. And JR, who would have thought which two guys would go into this perfect?
I would have
not
pegged
who you would think.
I would have pegged Nichols. I thought Nichols was one of my early on favorites. I thought him and Cornette were two of
Dave
my
Hall,
favorites.
Though.
And no, not a slight to Dave Hall. We didn't really know him as well as we knew the other guys. And we knew Nichols and Cornette knew their shit. And Greenhouse to me is still the most disappointing so far. But yeah. Cornette, you know, he's gonna bitch and cry about Wade Boggs. I thought that was a layup for a medium question. Come on, you got to get that one right. Those two were synonymous together. It wasn't like it was a random one-off throwaway. And that's right, Cornette, I'm calling you out. It's a lot of shit-talking you do, brother. Yeah. So anyway, there you go. We have four left. The field has been narrowed. Next week, we will be having Jason Greenhouse versus Jay Hinchey, and then hopefully the week after we'll have Jeremy and Dave Hall. So I hope you enjoyed this action-packed episode. It was a good one. King of the Ring 97, NFL Week 1, and trivia. And of course, Thursday night will be part two of our big interview with Bruno Lauer, Harvey Whippleman. Looking forward to chatting with him again. Part one was awesome. If you haven't heard it yet, tune in. You got a few days left before part two is posted.
Yes. Yes.
So, all right. With all that said, Scott, let's wrap things up. Hope everyone had a great Labor Day weekend. We'll talk to you later this week. Me, Scott, Bruno Lauer, you there, PTB Nation. We'll talk to you soon. Take care.
Bye.
Wade Boggs, Hall of Famer, number 12.